Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. You know, it's fascinating. That's not exactly what I had planned. I guess the show reverted back to its regular opening. I had uploaded something specially for this this incredible day, this Memorial Day, this way that we honor the fallen that sacrificed everything, basically, for us. And I had this. Why did I play that? Because it's get you all excited as a glorification of war? No, just for the opposite. I remember when I was younger, high school, college, we used to have, and I was in Boston, and in Boston there was an amazing conductor named Arthur Fiedler. And Arthur Fiedler used to do summer concerts. And on July 4th, they played the 1812 Overture. And they had the church bells in the city ringing, and they had fireworks and these titanium, you know, special exploding shells going off. And we had the howitzer cannons, and it was amazing. And it was totally wrong. It was just, you know, the biggest problem, and the thing that I want to make really clear today, this is not the show about the glorification of war. If you want that, you're on the wrong show. This is a show about honoring the fallen and the reality of war. And we're going to have several veterans join us, combat veterans and other people. I have my very special new favorite reporter for Mondays, Mama B. Thomas. Mama B is on the line. And so Mama B, welcome to our Memorial Day very special show here on Action Radio.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. It is a blessed day to really be alive and well. I'm calling. I'm in on the city of Tallahassee, Florida today. And it's going to be wonderful. And we thank God for life, health, and strength, and the goodness of our Creator, especially for this special day. Wow. We wouldn't have America if it was not for Memorial Day. Thank you.
You know, it's funny. I think about the veterans and the soldiers that fought for our country every day. You know, sometimes we sort of relegate this to holidays, but to me, you know, the most important way that we honor those that gave their lives for our freedom is to fight for our freedom here. And we got a crisis in this country. And again, I don't sugarcoat stuff. You know, I ask questions I probably shouldn't ask, and at the risk of offending whoever is listening, please, if you know, call us 215-383-3132. That phone number is on the broadcast page. We also have the live chat. You know, anybody's welcome to call in on that, to type in a message there, and that goes worldwide. And also, we have a Skype line. You know, you need pre-approval, so you got to call me the day before. So if you call today, you'll be able to talk to us from anywhere in the world tomorrow. But this, you know, the thing that I really want to have kind of like a theme for today is the fact that the fight for freedom is not just on a foreign battlefield. It absolutely is there, but it's not just there. It's here.
Yes.
We have a nation. Go ahead. B, go ahead, please.
You're absolutely right. I love you speaking on that. So continue, Copius. You know, I love that. And it's not only about that. It's a lot that America is blessed We are blessed, but it took a lot of sacrifice. So continue going with it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the sacrifice, you know, I have so many questions. This is why I'm hoping some of our veterans join us, because there's a lot of details about the military. I'd be very curious. One of the biggest ones, of course, is the fact that we're in a nation that is suffering under the very things people gave their lives to prevent in other countries. And yet it's happening here. If I were a veteran, if I had been in combat in a foreign war, I would be furious right now. And on this day especially, to have these hypocrites, these hypocritical politicians, talk about how wonderful, you know, the valor of our soldiers, the sacrifice they gave, which is very real. I'm not talking about the sacrifice. I'm talking about the hypocrisy of the politicians who are going to go back to office tomorrow and vote to take away our rights, to vote to use, you know, tragedies like happened in Texas. And they're going to say, to make our country better, we have to give away your rights. And this knee-jerk reaction. You know, I spent a lot of time working with a woman named Jen Clark in Australia on an Australian Bill of Individual Rights. They don't even have a Bill of Rights. So when people say that our Bill of Rights is inadequate or has problems or things left out, sure, yeah, maybe, and that's fair criticism. But there are countries around us, modern Western nations like Australia, that don't even have a Bill of Rights. So what did their soldiers fight and die for? You got to start asking the questions. You know, we are blessed, but we're also blessed with the courage to improve, with the courage to ask questions, with the courage to say, this is, you know, where we are is incredible. Let's stand on the shoulders of those who gave their lives and increase freedom even more, rather than say, wasn't this great? Look what they did for us. And then just sit back and go back to the barbecue.
And don't do nothing. Yes.
You got to do something.
Yes. The voice got to be heard. We got to shake the foundation of this earth. We got to.
Yeah.
We really got to.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. Because
agreed.
We got, yeah, exactly about the politicians. And they come in and they use anything, which is set up by the enemy. And whatever they set up to do, like this shooting or whatever went on,
mm-hmm.
And God knows that he will prevail. He will expose it, okay? But they use those children as a bait to take away our gun rights or to freeze us up on what they think should be and not what the voters have voted for. And then also, they put all these mandates on our military. And they think it's a joke. They think it's a joke. We got to stand up. Each individual will have to stand up and fight with our soldiers together and tear down this mandate of evilness. We got to. There is no way in snowball hell are we going to keep on being stepped on and rubbed through like a doormat? It's not going to happen. We got to do this.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking of something that hadn't occurred to me before. So it's part of why I love having you on the show with me here. We have to defend our military. And that's not a contradiction when I say that. Everybody thinks, well, the military defends us. Well, no, we have to defend our military. We have to defend our military from these mandates. We have to defend our military from vaccines that can kill them. We have to defend our military just as we had to defend our military from Gulf War syndrome, from Agent Orange. We have to defend our military. I believe it is our civic duty as citizens, as citizens like me. I did not serve in the military. I'll tell you that story in a minute here. Because it's kind of complex, and I still wrestle with it to this day. I understand the decisions I made when I was younger, and I'll tell you why. But we have to defend our military. You know, we've got Jordan Carr coming on the show at some time this morning. An Air Force officer refused to take the jab and lost her service career because of it, and that is courageous. You know, the courage to say no, the courage to not follow orders when those orders are wrong. We have to defend our military. We have to defend those individuals that are willing to stand up, not only to stand up to protect our rights, but to stand up and exercise their right to say no to an unjust order. Now, we hear that
exactly.
all the time that the military... Yeah, go ahead. Expand on that, and then I'll get another point. But, yeah, go ahead.
Because when you get unraveled like me, when you take it to the by force, okay?
we are kind of forced to be
reckoned. We ain't playing.
No, we're not playing.
We ain't joking about this issue.
No.
Okay?
No, when I say we have to defend our military, I am absolutely serious about that.
And we take it to heart because if it wasn't for our military fighting for the country that we live in, supposed to be the home of the free,
mm-hmm.
those that are brave enough to stand up for what's right, not sit down and look at CNN all day long. And
you know, I wonder what happens.
On it.
Yeah. Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much evil is trying to overturn what God has put in place. But we have to understand one thing. We mm-hmm. got to stand by them through thick and thin. And we got to know accountability. Putting things into our soldiers is wrong. But they've been doing this practice for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It is coming out. It is coming out. Where it's going to be like violent. I'm going to put it on you regardless if you refuse it or not. Now, forget about what they sworn in to do. It's not about them anymore. It's about them shifting on us to make us be less and powerless. The devil is a liar. And I know definitely that Jesus is the Messiah. Okay?
No, I'm with you.
We're going to fight back. We got to fight
but,
back.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and people think that, almost say the difference, this is why I have Wendy Arthur when she does the Oh My God report, you know, Christianity with a kick. We talk about this all the time. There's a big difference between God and religion, between scripture and what somebody wrote down, you know, for a Sunday sermon. There's all the
mm-hmm.
difference in the world. I mean, God wants us to be free. God wants us to live
mm-hmm.
the best life we can. And the moral code, you know, the Ten Commandments is really a code of freedom. If you live your life this way, you are going to be more free than if you live your life, you know, filled with sin, which is going to make your own life miserable. You know, and you look at the people with drug addictions and other problems and constant bankruptcies and all the things people do and being unfaithful and all the things people do to screw up their lives. They screw up their lives. You know, so there's a way to live free. But for the folks that make the choice to live an honorable, moral, you know, virtuous life, that choose to serve in the military, you know, serving in the military does not, to me, mean that because you've made that choice and that you, you know, you may have to give your life, you know, for your country because that's what you're sworn to do, doesn't mean we have to waste your life for your country. Doesn't mean that these orders to take vaccine mandates, which aren't even vaccines, you know, and this goes back to Gulf War syndrome with the anthrax vaccine, which I'm sure wasn't a vaccine either. You know, as I look into it and the chemicals that go into it, I did a lot of research on this several years ago back at WBY. And there was a chemical called an adjuvant. And what an adjuvant is, it's kind of like the cheap way of boosting. It's like an octane booster in gasoline. And it was called squalene. And I found squalene was in the anthrax shot. It's also in the flu shots. It's probably in these, you know, DNA jabs right now. And so we know what the problem are. And I don't know how you order somebody to take something for a virus that is 99.9, probably 9% not going to affect members of our military who are generally young, the healthiest among us, some of the greatest athletes, some of the most mentally mm-hmm. strong people. And these are the folks you're giving something to that they don't need. Who's ordering this?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing would make our military mm-hmm. less ready than to inject them with a dangerous spike protein-inducing, heart-disturbing, organ-disrupting thing and then say, this is for national security. There's the hypocrisy again.
Yes, exactly.
Hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
but.
Mm-hmm. On the bright side.
The big ones that on top of it, they're not taking it.
Yeah.
But you order our soldiers our lieutenants and our colonels and
mm-hmm.
all of them, but the rest have not taken it. You understand? So they make them as guinea pigs,
mm-hmm.
as scapegoats. And then once they do all of that, when war is ready in the United States of America, we're going to be unarmed. It's a takeover. So they claim. But you can't stop the movement of God, because we got soldiers that's going to stand up,
mm-hmm.
like the odds that's coming on the radio station. They're strong and mighty, and they multiplying with truth and justice, because this is how they love their country, okay? They
mm-hmm.
got sworn in to do the duties that the soldiers to do. I know, because I'm into that family, okay? I'm part of military also.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I know that when the battle and the race goes, our military stand in full force. But how can you now, when they have played on their mind, you got to be strong. You
mm-hmm.
got to be tough. You got to be willing. And so many have committed suicide. That's what angers.
Well,
that right there.
What do you think's behind it? You know,
who we
the
got
reason I ask...
holding the United, who we got holding the United States of America?
Mm-hmm.
Who's behind it? We
well, not who's behind,
behind
it, but here's what I'm asking. I wonder sometimes, you know, every time you say something, you get me thinking, which is why, you know, again, I love having you on the show. But I'm thinking suicide. Suicide is a result of, I think, a lot of times a conflict that you can't resolve within yourself. And for the soldiers, for the veterans, the people that served in Afghanistan, Iraq most recently, you know, if you come back, if you were fighting for freedom and you went through hell, literally hell, overseas, and then you come back here and see your country that you swore to you know, to fight for and if necessary die for, and many did, and this is why we have Memorial Day to honor those that have fallen, and you look and you see the hypocrisy of the leaders, the stolen government, the coup that took place, it would drive me crazy. I mean, I think, you know, I wonder if that frustration of the whys, why did I do this, why am I suffering PTSD now? Why do I have all these problems? You know, the conflicts that are going on with people, I think that's a lot of what our suicide is based on. We need to help these folks, and we need to put a rational, we need to you know, find a you know, a solution to this, and a huge investigation of our government that sent these people there as to why they did that. Because they're all set to send them to Ukraine. They're all set to send them to a bunch of other places. We got a permanent war class.
Let me jump in on this one, too.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them say suicide, but what about the one refused? And then they send home and say they committed suicide. There's an order in place that if a soldier refused the command, you taken out. What does it say to the widows and widowers?
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem on the family, okay? They communication of their loved ones. Nobody wants to find out to get someone in to examine that body once it comes into that family back home. See, it's a lot of undercover foolishness that are going on in America, but
mm-hmm.
it's going to be uncovered, because you know why? America now have took the crown that is on the head of the thorns of what have been placed. America is not longer going to be in darkness like it have been,
mm-hmm.
with all these hidden agendas, all the hidden agendas. Listen carefully. When we had this foolishness going on, with all these lives supposed to be mattered, it was so much destruction in the land that law enforcement, Husama's military, and our military, it was so focused on destroying and tearing up that made the Americans in our country confused, okay, blinders, why they try to destroy our military and our armed forces of law. So as you seeing, they want to defund the law, and also they wanted to defund the military. So when they put these people in these offices, it was to distract America for what actually is happening in 2022. It was to destroy a leader that had was working with our military, building our military up strong. What separated it? Evil, confusion, lying and scheming and plotting by who the other side of the twisted of America, we got some twisted now, wanted something else to lead. See, it was designed to make a chaos while our soldiers crying out for help. Older and younger, crying out, somebody help me. Same way in Afghanistan, when Biden and Obama had them over there, you remember, go back, remember now, they left them. What formed ISIS? Why? Because America turned their back on their own. You see, it was already in place, but we was on a blinder eye, could not see clearly until the rain cleared up the wipers in our eyes. Then when truth began to come out, we lose our seal, 30-something seal. See, you do not forget these things, blowed up mysteriously in the air. Then it comes out that he had Bin Laden sold off of some ship. You know, all these kind of foolishness, but never mention our Navy SEAL.
Yep.
Oh, it anger me. It anger me in a family, in a children, in a grandchildren. Such top secret. What happened to us? Benghazi, what happened to America to stand up to these foolish games that was played on us? Mindset, the mind of how they set the chaos up in order to steal the votes. Our military was strong and was getting built strong. Then you want to take on the gun control. But you got guards around your property. What in the world is this flip-flopping stuff? It's a pure D, bona fide, discombobulated demons. And that's what we are fighting against. Our military, our American military soldiers, over the corruption and breaking families up. This is the problem in America. And we got to stand, and we got to stand firm to tear down them walls of destruction. Tear it down and put our military back in force in our law enforcement. That's what got me angry. This is why they celebrate Memorial Day, but some was too short lived. They lied over foolishness and then leave half of them like it's nothing and keep on with your foolishness. No, this got to stop. We no longer will be secondhand tamales or secondhand lunch meat. We got to stand together. And it ain't about a doggone race. Still God's children. And we got to stand on it. The grounds of righteousness. We're going to take it back. America is not sinking. We are taking it back by force. Now, I'm going to get stirred up now.
that's what should happen. I mean, this is not a quiet holiday. This is, in fact, this isn't what I really call a holiday, except for the classic definition of a holy day. This is a day for action. This is a day to take stock of where we are. This is a day to, and I think the theme, if I had to pick a theme, you know, we need to fight for the military as much as the military fighting for us. What do we do for our fellow citizens? And you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, I am so sick of the division of race and class and age and nationality and every other thing. We're all Americans. You know, when I came to this country from Australia, and I looked around, and I was a minority of one. I was the only Canadian Australian in my school. All I saw was Americans. I mean, the fact there were black Americans, white Americans, you know, Jewish Americans, Christian Americans, Native Americans. I mean, all the other people that I saw, to me, all I saw was Americans. You know, and I still have that vision. I still retain that. It took a bit of work to get it back because I kind of fell into the class, race, and age and, you know, structural differences. And I went back to where I was as a kid. And I think the military is really good about that. Now, like I said, I didn't serve, but everybody I've talked to in the military, you know, the person beside you, you don't care what race they are. If your life is in their hands and their life is in your hands, it is irrelevant. And so we need to think of that as citizens too, that as citizens, it doesn't matter. If you're an American, you're an American. Okay. We have a bond. We have a bond like no other country, that there is an American dream, that there is an American promise of individual rights, that there is something sacred about this country. There is something exceptional about this country. This is why people come here. But they have to come here to be Americans, not come here for tax benefits of hardworking people. Big difference. Mm-hmm. That's what the left doesn't understand. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rhinos, uh-huh. The same way. Put them in the basket, too. Put them on in the basket with the rest of the nuts. Because once you see the crack up, you'll find it's more than donkey meat that is at hand.
Yeah.
You understand me?
Mm-hmm. Completely. Oh, yeah. You're one of the clearest thinkers I've ever known. And it's just a pleasure to engage in the, you know, the subjects that we talk about. Let me start our poetry today with probably the most disgusting poem ever written about war, because it glorifies it. And I think something changed in war. And you look at World War One, where the first, you know, movies were made, first documentaries, news actually from the trenches. People really saw the horrors of war. I think before World War One, I don't think people really understood how horrible this was, because the only thing people knew about war were the stories from the living who came back, and they would tell them. But I don't think it had as much impact, because the government doesn't want you to think about the horrors of war. They want you to think of the glory for war, so that the next generation, usually of young men, but not anymore. You know, we have women serving, but the deal was that, you know, if you're going to get young men into battle, you got to make it glorified. And so this poem came out by Alfred Lord Tennyson called The Charge of the Light Brigade. It's one of the greatest celebrated defeats and military disasters in history. And yet, you know, I'm sure every British schoolboy knows. I have poetry from different countries. Okay, this is not purely American poetry, but listen to this and tell me, B, if you're as disgusted as I am. About glorification of this is almost like a recruiting poem. Let's get the next generation to proudly die for no reason from a military decision that should never have been made, and yet here we are. It's called The Charge of the Light Brigade. Half a league, half a league, half a league onward. All in the valley of death rode the 600. Forward the Light Brigade. Charge for the guns, he said. Into the valley of death rode the 600. Forward the Light Brigade. Was there a man dismayed? Not though the soldier knew, someone had blundered. Theirs not to make reply. Theirs not to reason why. Theirs but to do or die. Into the valley of death rode the 600. Cannons to the right of them. Cannons to the left of them. Cannons in front of them. Volleyed and thundered. Stormed at with shot and shell. Boldly they rode and well. into the jaws of death, into the mouth of hell, rode the 600. Flashed all their sabers bare, flashed as they turned in air, sabering the guns there, charging an army while all the world wondered. Plunged in the battery smoke, ride through the line they broke. Cossack and Russian reeled from the saber stroke, shattered and sundered. Then they rode back, but not the 600. Maybe I've misjudged this poem. I have to rethink this. Cannon to the right of them, cannon to the left of them, cannon behind them, volleyed and thundered, stormed at with shot and shell, while horse and hero fell. They that fought so well came through the jaws of death, back from the mouth of hell, all that was left of them, left of the 600. When can their glory fade? Oh, the wild charge they made. All the world wondered. Honor the charge they made. Honor the Light Brigade, noble 600. I got some mixed feelings on this one. What do you? How do you react?
They came out fighting bravely, but
just the but that I'm interested in.
Not aware of how the enemy has surrounded them.
Here's what I understand of this. This was a cavalry charge with sabers into artillery. The Russians had lined the hills with cannons, you know, big artillery. And most of, if I understand war, and I've studied war pretty carefully, because it was sort of a fascination and a horror all at the same time. Most of the soldiers who are killed in battle are killed by artillery. You look at World War I in the trenches. You look at World War II, you know, it's the randomness. It's like IEDs, these improvised explosive devices in Iraq and Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. So many of our soldiers were, you know, it doesn't matter your skill, it doesn't matter your training. We've got the best skill in training. We got the best soldiers in the world. We got the best equipment in the world. But the one thing that, that the military cannot train you for is random events. And a random event of an artillery shell, a random event of an explosive device, takes all your training and negates it. It makes it worthless in terms of that particular thing. So if you add to that generals who don't fight the battles, who already, maybe have already fought their battles or maybe never served, especially back in the old British days where the generals were aristocrats, they were the upper class. They ordered the masses, you know, to die. You look at World War I. World War I is really a fascinating study because you've got these aristocratic, you know, British and German generals who I'm sure never served a day in their life. I'm sure they never did a day's work in their life. We're happily ordering literally millions, I think 16 million soldiers died in the trenches of World War I. For what? You know, they had cavalry charges against machine guns and barbed wire. It doesn't work. And yet, despite the massive, despite millions, literally millions of lost soldiers, they kept doing it. What kind of a rationality, what kind of insanity possesses
what
not only generals
soul?
To keep... Yeah, to possess as generals to keep ordering and things like that, but nations to put up with it. Oh, be brave. Go ahead and die for your country. In a trench? I'm sorry.
How despicable. How lifeless without a heart. And what you was really fighting for if the cannons took you all out.
With sabers? Sabers don't fight cannons. You cannot defeat cannons with sabers.
No.
I don't care how brave
you
are.
Oh, my God.
So at what point?
That was a poem that had a twisted turn in it.
Mm-hmm. That's why I questioned it. It's got a redeeming quality to it, but then it loses it in the end. You know, where it says, when can their glory fade? Oh, the wild charge they made. All the world wondered. Honor the charge they made? Honor the Light Brigade? The noble 600 who bravely died for the country without question. Which raises the question, at what point do you question? Here's the part I think was the most interesting. And I really want to know what you think of this, because people don't know where this came from. You know, ours is about to do and die. People don't know where, this is where it came from, okay? It says, was there forward, this is the second verse, forward the Light Brigade, was there a man dismayed? Not though the soldier knew someone had blundered. Now, this is the only place in this poem where it talks about the mistakes, but it doesn't really, it doesn't explain, it doesn't justify. All it says is bravely they went, someone had blundered. Now, here are the three lines that I find fascinating. Theirs not to make reply. Theirs not to reason why. Theirs but to do and die. into the valley of death rode the 600. Is that what we expect of our soldiers? Because I don't. B?
That's not what our soldiers is for. Our soldiers is to win a battle.
And you don't win a battle. Yeah, you don't win a battle by committing suicide. Yeah.
Absolutely, taking lives out like that. You wasn't intending to win the battle. Wasn't no glory in that. What was the glory at in that? When you sabotage the whole 600.
Mm-hmm.
What was the glory?
None that I can see. You know, and this is why I played the 1812 Overture, which is the same war, I think. I'm pretty sure that the Charge of the Light Brigade was during 1812. And I think Crimea, which is a name that should remind people. I mean, you know, we have someone that knows history better than I do. You know, feel free to correct me. But as far as I know, that was Crimea, which is part of Ukraine, which is Russian, which was Russian at the time. And the French, I think, went in, and the British went in, the French under Napoleon.
Okay. Look at this. Look at the key word. What you just say it was in what part of Russia?
Ukraine, which I think was part of Russia at
what
that
time. Where are we at now?
How about that? Yeah.
Okay. Truth will set you free, won't it?
It sure will.
Where's all our firearms and all going to?
Yeah, Ukraine.
What if these billions and billions of dollars they sent in was so desperately, and some of the Republicans agreed with that? We're back to what you just read. We're back to just what it, history. Oh, my God.
I told you this was going to be an interesting show. I told you. I told you when we start going.
Oh, my goodness. History has time in it that sometimes we are back in the revolving door of evil.
I think we're in a revolution. I think it's a peaceful revolution. I think we can continue to keep it a peaceful revolution. This is why I created Action Radio, a citizen legislator writing the laws that we consent to be governed by. That's never been tried in the history of the world. This is a brand new concept.
It needs to be.
Yeah.
This is why God give man knowledge.
Yeah.
And some of the few will find it and not stuck on themselves. Look at this. Look how this history that you just read off. And what are we in?
And that's just one poem, and I've got 50 of them. I've got at least 50 of them I've highlighted. It's been a busy weekend. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Because it got to be told. And you read that perfectly.
Well, thank you.
I imagine myself in that group running out there. And at that time, I think it was swords that they had. Maybe they had those type of guns that the powder. Maybe in all of that, you running out there, you're discombobulated in the mind because you think that you, when you ran out there, you was going to have the war taken care of, but the war was on you for going out there and booby trapping. See, it's a lot of things. It's a lot of things about Ukraine was not an angel. Okay? It had a whole lot of flaws in it and still do. As we take our mind back, 2016, 17, 18, 19. It's supposed to be the president that was in charge at the time was in a Russia collusion. Now, find out there was all a bunch of lies.
Mm-hmm.
See, we got to be mindful of what's around us and what we speak of and how we interpret it and how we listen and how it is carried out. Because if you look at this, why are we building up somebody else's country that was in corruption also? And
why are we destroying our own country? Why are we destroying our own country with people that aren't coming here to be Americans?
Tell it.
Hey, listen.
Tell it.
And I've got a plan. And here's another question, too. Why are Americans so unwilling to fight for our own country? They're willing to send other people to go fight in foreign places for our freedom, which I question, too. But why are Americans so unwilling to fight for our own country, to fight for a country free of illegal aliens, to fight for a country that won't allow a coup to take over our government, to fight for a country where the rights actually mean something, where when some politician stands up and says, for the greater good, you know, we have to take your rights away because that way, you know, all your problems will be solved. Well, the only problem that's going to be solved is for them. And that's the problem, how to acquire the most power. Go ahead.
Oh,
you know where I'm going.
You're
going
my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Woo.
Yeah. Welcome indeed to the Freedom Shop. Well, here's something for you.
And once they do that, look at this method of how God allowed man to get money, to make wealth, to do what it's supposed to do. The poor will be with us always. That's what the Word of God said.
Mm-hmm.
It will be with us always because some chose to be that way. Okay? But what about someone telling you they're going to take off? They're burning down the mill plant. They're burning down all of this stuff in America to take us into the dark days. You don't have formula for your baby.
But you can make it. See, here's the American spirit. You know, the first thing we talked about was I looked up online. In fact, when Pianki Broder, Pianki's one of our great colleagues, for those that are new to the show, as soon as we talked about this, he said, you know, my grandmother made baby formula. Well, let's look it up. So I had a recipe for baby formula within about 30 seconds, you know, for homemade baby formula. Okay. What did that
say? And then they're going to say it's dangerous. Dangerous.
Vitamins, minerals,
to your baby.
Corn syrup, and
from
yeah.
The womb. Oh
yeah.
My God!
Americans
Who
have to stop being cowards. We've got a nation of cowards. We've got a nation of cowards. We have to kick their butts and get them out of it. People are too scared to make decisions. Yeah. Well, here's something I thought of. You're going to either love or hate this thought here. While we were talking about the charge of the Light Brigade, you know, I substituted Into the Valley of Death Road the 600 to Into the Doctor's Office, you know, Walked the 6,000. What's the difference between riding into cannon fire and walking into a doctor's office to get a vaccine that may very well kill you? Death is death.
But look at this, too.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, they didn't have the money to offer people for doing all that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Here, for the vaccine, they go into the poor neighborhoods and offer them $150, $200, how about $500 to get you and your child these shots? What is that call to you? Greg, what do it look like?
It was called bribery.
To you.
And then when you're threatened, it's called extortion. You know, and if it were that good, see, I don't mind governments trying to persuade us to do things. If they had public service announcements, they said, this is a wonderful thing. Take this snake oil jab and you'll be free of COVID, you know, even 99.95% of you are free of it anyway. You know, and they said, okay, that's fine. If you want to do that, you want to spend money, okay, we may criticize the policy, but to make you do it. You know, look at the people that gave their lives so that the government wouldn't make you do it. That's the removal of the sacrifice. That's the desecration of the sacrifice. That's the trashing of the sacrifice. That's the invalidation of the sacrifice that our veterans made.
It violates my rights. It violates me.
Yeah.
It violates every individual
mm-hmm.
that the country's supposed to be standing for.
And how can soldiers... Go ahead.
And some of them put their children life at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And now they talking about some kind of pops. You better be talking about Donkey Stew pops and Rhino pops.
Yeah.
Because the Almighty is not sleep, nor do he slumber, nor did his word come back void, nor do he compromise with evil. Now,
mm-hmm.
you done brainwashed America. Well, you thought you brainwashed them. Only the ones that possess it by their own method. And you think you're going to get away with all that? I doubt if you ever will. It won't work.
No. Well,
out by the true soldiers.
We need an awakening. I don't know if there are veterans groups that do this. I don't know if the American Legion or the Veterans of Foreign Wars or somebody should stand up and support all these folks that are rejecting the jab. You know, how can we ask our soldiers to give their life for our Constitution but not let them use it? What is the point of rights if they don't apply to everybody? Where do we get the ridiculous idea that rights, constitutional rights, don't apply to people in uniform? You know, do you give up your humanity, your God-given birthright just because you choose to defend your country? That never made any sense to me. You know, and at what point do you make the choice to disobey what I consider an unlawful order? Well, the government says it's a lawful order. Well, of course the government says it's a lawful order. They always say what they do is a lawful order. They're the government. They're not going to say they're mm-hmm. an unlawful order, so that's not an argument. You know, it's like saying when people have a religious exemption. Well, that, an exemption means you don't have to do it, right? Well, then the government or the corporation comes along and says, well, it's not a sincere exemption. You don't have a sincere religious belief. Well, who are you to judge my religious belief? That's not the First Amendment. It doesn't say the right to practice sincere religious beliefs is the right to freedom of religion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they don't qualify.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so this is this whole idea, but at some point, you know, we have to analyze. We need to talk to our military folks. At what point do you question? Well, here's another thing I was thinking too. I used to have this what I call the inverse theory of military leadership. The military promotes people, and this I'd love to get a soldier's view of this, especially combat folks. The military promotes people based on how well they follow orders. So what you're doing is you're progressively weeding out the people that are the leaders. You're getting rid of the leaders the further up the officer chain you go. And when you get to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you get General Milley, who contacts his counterpart in China because he doesn't like what Trump's doing. He's following orders of somebody. So at what point do we take the leaders in the military and make them
the
officers and stop the followers from ruining everything and going woke and everything else that's going on? Go ahead, B.
Let me say.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be the time the SWAT, the firing SWAT would take
mm-hmm.
you out.
Mm-hmm.
I read that in the history book, that when you neglect your country and do the things that are out of order
mm-hmm.
and trade your country in to another country, the firing SWAT comes out.
Well, that's treason. Yeah, you're talking about treason.
Take care of,
yeah.
yes. Take care of the leader and all them that follow through with it.
Mm-hmm.
Take care of them all. You ain't had no problem. Now, see, you look at some of these countries overseas. They don't have courts. They just take them out and they're gone.
Well, Russia, they used to send the bill for the bullet to the family. You'd have to pay for your family member's execution in Russia. I mean, Stalin was famous for that. Or people would disappear. You know, you look at Russia, China, Cambodia under Pol Pot, Castro in Cuba. They have no rights. These people just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only reason you and I are in a gulag is because we're in America.
Yeah, they someone be fished out at the bottom of the sea.
Yeah.
But the sea level have to be all the way down and you find them. You know what I mean?
I do. Let me, I want to run some more poems by you, and I'm hoping some other folks will join us. I don't know if they're coming in the next hour or the following one, but if not, Mama B and I, we're going to hold down the show here. This is from a person named Writer Fox, and I'm not sure who that is. I think it's an anonymous person. It's called Induction. An induction, for folks that aren't familiar, that's when you're brought into the military, usually, I guess, by a draft. He says, there are a few things worth dying for. There are a few things worth living for. Land is not enough for either. It's only dust. And under that, the corpse is buried for 6,000 years. And under that, the rock spewed forth from 1,000 suns. And the sky is full of balls, like this one. You have your pick of them. There are enough of them to go around, and then some. Land is not enough. There's always something more than that to drive the soldier to his duty. Don't shoot until you know it. If not, you'll miss the mark.
It sounds like the book of Ecclesiastes.
Well, that's interesting. Tell me how.
Time to do, you know, time to not do.
Yeah. To everything there is a season?
Yes.
Yeah.
Under the sun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Some of these poems, we do have quotes here. Here's another interesting one. And again, I'm not doing the glory of war here. Like I say, we're doing just the opposite. There was a very controversial poem I had forgotten about. I probably did it on a previous show. It's called The War Prayer by Mark Twain. And he wrote it in 1905 as a protest against the Philippine-American War. I got the website I'm reading from. Let me just scroll back up here so people know where I'm getting this from. Hub Pages. It's called War Poetry, 50 Poems About War, Soldier Poems. And I guess Writer Fox is the author, January 17, 2018. So it's a compilation. And so let me get back down here to The War Prayer by Mark Twain. The background of this is quite fascinating because Mark Twain, as you know, was ironic, sarcastic, and bitingly satirical in his protest. So it says here, Mark Twain wrote The War Prayer in 1905 as a protest. I heard that part. His publisher refused to publish it, and his family objected too. Twain said, "I have told the whole truth in that, and only dead men can tell the truth in this world. It can be published after I am dead." The poem was published posthumously in 1916, 2 years after World War I began. It has been in print since that day. They got a video here, but I've got to, I think this is the whole thing, at least I hope so. So here's The War Prayer by Mark Twain. O Lord, our Father, our young patriots, idols of our hearts, go forth to battle. Be thou them, with them, in spirit, we also go forth from the sweet peace of our beloved firesides to smite the foe. O Lord, our God, help us to tear their soldiers to bloody shreds with our shells. Help us to cover their smiling fields with the pale farms of their patriot dead. Help us to drown the thunder of the guns with the shrieks of their wounded, writhing in pain. Help us to lay waste their humble homes with a hurricane of fire. Help us to wring the hearts of their unoffending widows with unavailing grief. Help us to turn them out roofless with little children to wander unfriended. The wastes of their desolated land in rags and hunger and thirst. Sports of the sun, flames of summer, and the icy winds of winter. Broken in spirit, worn with travail. Imploring thee for the refuge of the grave and denied it for our sakes who adore thee. Lord, bless their hopes, blight their lives, protract their bitter pilgrimage, make heavy their steps, water their way with their tears, stain the white snow with the blood of their wounded feet. We ask it in the spirit of love, of him who is the source of love and who is the ever-faithful refuge and friend of all that are sore, beset, and seek his aid with humble and contrite hearts. I can see why that wasn't published. Yeah, that's Mark Twain. There's a different side of Mark Twain for those that haven't heard it.
And you know what? I think I got that book somewhere at my house.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was one that I loved to read about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I got that book at my house.
Hmm. Well, here's
going
the question,
forward,
though. If it's legitimate to ask God to destroy your enemies, is that a righteous request of God, considering both nations
yes,
are doing
David
it
did.
To each other?
David did it. So
okay.
Why not?
That's what I'm asking.
David wrote it, and why not? All through the Bible, from Genesis to Revelation, God did something, and the enemy was destroyed. He destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And he told them to get out. Who he had assigned to get out, but one looked back and turned to a pillar of salt. Yeah.
That's a good point. No, that's a very good point, and so I'm glad I asked, because I'm thinking, you know, in World War One, on either side of the trenches, there were German priests saying, God bless the German soldiers, let's hope they kill the British and the Americans and the French. And I'm sure there were British and American French chaplains who said, God, let us kill the Germans. You know, and you've got, you know, how does God sort that out?
From the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Okay.
As you notice, just like Germany did so much evil, okay? Only a few came out of it by the hands of the evil one. And they was become preserved by God to have a legacy of the testimony of life. Little children fascinated in streets, fooling them, pulling them from their moms and daddies. So much went on with God's little ones as the example. It's so much that people use the children. And what Mark Twain had was, he had a mind on both sides of the coin, and he expressed himself to that. Not him making them up. The stories wasn't made up. It was a life history that he was on a journey from a child and up. Some things family did agree with, and some things they did not. But he wrote
it. Yeah. See, I think I understand Mark Twain, you know, and I love him as a writer, but you can see the hypocrisy. He hated the war, the Philippine-American War, or maybe it was part of the, part of the Spanish-American War, but he hated that aspect of it. And I can see him seeing, as I understand Mark Twain, the hypocrisy of asking God for a great victory over people that should never be in battle. It's like Guernica, you know, when the Spanish bombed this town in Spain. I got a poem on that too. It's fascinating that at what point, you know, are you calling for righteousness for a just cause, or are you calling for righteousness because you simply want to be victorious over other people so you can control them, steal their country, steal their land? And as we just heard from the previous poem, land is dust. What are you stealing? Is it worth fighting and dying for? You know, it becomes an interesting question. That's why I think you wrote that poem. Let me get you another one. This is by Carl Sandburg. It's an excerpt actually from The People, Yes. And we've all heard this one before. I want to read it. It's very short. It says, the little girl saw her first troop parade and asked, what are those? Soldiers. What are soldiers? They are for war. They fight and each tries to kill as many of the other side as he can. The girl held still and studied. Do you know? I know something. Yes, what is it you know? Sometime they'll give a war and nobody will come. Interesting. So here's the question. There's the next question for us. If
the war,
and nobody will come.
And nobody will come.
So, see, to me, the wars that nobody should have showed up for was Iraq and Afghanistan. And God bless the people that went. I'm not trying to take anything away from the people that were killed, were crippled, that served, came back with PTSD, traumatic brain injuries, every other injury you can think of. My point is they never should have had to go. I was against those two wars from day one. And yet our brave Congress, you know, ponied up the money, sent them over. George Bush the younger happily ordered him into battle. And I think that was George Bush the elder and the younger. You know, the elder so he could be a great war president, and the younger so he could show daddy he could do it too. That is not a reason for sending people to war. I am sorry.
And you know what? Mm-hmm. They have to give an account of that in judgment time. You know, because you ain't going to get away with all that. Okay?
Yep.
None of that you will be getting away with. And then if the Daddy Bush was true to a war, he should have wiped out the enemy when he had a chance to.
Well, were they the enemy? I mean, you know, I mean, Saddam Hussein was a terrible person. I mean, everybody knows that. He was a terrible person. So was Castro.
You know,
there's a lot of terrible people.
It was all of this to lose our soldiers over.
Mm-hmm.
He should have wiped it out when he had the chance to.
Well, I wonder about that because initially we went over to protect the oil of Kuwait. And the claim of, are we dying for oil? That's not good enough. That's not a, you know, I mean, those kind of things can be resolved at least diplomatically. But a lot of our wars have been over resources and trade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you go back through history, navigation routes. We've got a war that hasn't started, but it could in the South China Sea between Taiwan, China, Japan, South Korea. That is a volatile area. And what are they talking about? Look at World War II. Why did Japan go to war in World War II? Resources and control of territory. Japan's a small country with a lot of people. They had a great military, but in the oil, that's why they went down to Indonesia. The Dutch East Indies, that's where Royal Dutch Shell gets their oil from.
Mm-hmm.
We had an oil embargo on Japan. So if you don't look at this in cold, hard reality, Pearl Harbor, I think, resulted from the Japanese trying to stop our blockade of what they considered their oil in somebody else's country. Geopolitics. Then we have World War II from it. I'm sorry. Yeah, let me read you another one. Here's Rudyard Kipling, who lived 1865 to 1936, a dead statesman. I could not dig. I dared not rob. Therefore, I lied to please the mob. Now all my lies are proved untrue, and I must face the men I slew. What tale shall serve me here among mine angry and defrauded young?
Wow.
What's Joe Biden going to say when he has to go before God and explain himself? What's George Bush going to say when he has to go before God and explain himself? What did George Bush the Elder say when he went before God to explain himself? Now all my lies are proved untrue, and I must face the men I slew. So in other words, the statesman is taking responsibility for the deaths of the people he ordered into battle based on lies.
And you know what? The saddest part about it, you may run, but you can't hide.
Yeah. Everybody has judgment day.
God said, hell, I'm there. In the earthly realm, I'm there. In the universe, I'm there. You got to come before me. No matter what you do.
Mm-hmm. And all the hypocrites and all the liars and all the officers that ordered their men into battle knowing that it was a problem or knowing it was suicidal and all the folks that have done all the things they've done, at what point do you say, I am not just following orders? The Nuremberg defense. Mm. At what point? Well, we have people like Jordan Carr who's going to come on the show hopefully soon. She said, I'm just not following orders. Those, to me, are the leaders. But can you have a military where they don't follow orders? So it's a quandary. It's a dilemma. At some point, you have to – I would take the people that are – the military is getting rid of their leaders. They're getting rid of the people with resourcefulness and creativity and a lot of intelligence, and they're getting the woke mob. It's like we talked about with the doctors the other day, that they're basically killing off the compliant, leaving us rebels to stick around and hopefully end up running the country. You know, it's a quandary. We're going to take a break I want to get your last comment. I want to take a break for a few minutes, give about 5 minutes to grab some coffee, take a break here, see if somebody else wants to join us at 253-833-3832. Live chat, I'm going to check live. I'm going to check live chat right now, actually. Nothing yet. So take a few minutes. Do you believe we've gone through an hour already? B?
Have we?
Yeah,
wow.
It's over an hour already. We only have 2 more hours left, believe it or not. All right. Let me put you on mute for just a little bit. Take about 5 minutes, and we'll get you back. I'm going to play a couple of things here, and I'll be back myself.
Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines.
This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government. That we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers. Dangerously cool.
All right, we're back, and let's make Mama B's line live. And anybody else wants to join us? 215-383-3832. I do have a rather extensive guest list. I'm surprised nobody has called in to join us. Unless B, they're just so fascinated with us and spellbound by our pithy, scintillating, and insightful dialogue that they're just in wonderment. Welcome back, Mama B.
Yeah, some is on a different time than we are. I'm an hour ahead of you.
Well, you're an hour ahead. You're up in Eastern time. I'm at Central time. Central time is 10 after 8.
Yes. Yes, and I got 9.
Yeah, you're 10 after 9 there. Yeah. Let me...
On different timing, but it's cool. It's all cool. It's all good.
Oh, no, listen, it's just you and me. That's fine with me. I mean, this is why I asked you to do our Monday shows from now on so that we could, and then we'll have extended panel discussions. We're going to have different folks. It's a holiday. Most people don't even know we have a live show today because they're so used to reruns. But I take holidays and use them for all kinds of different things that actually, give some meaning, things I can't do on a normal day, like April 19th, Patriots Day. I read the Tennyson poem. What's his name? Oh, Ralph. I can't believe I get brought now. Paul Revere, the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere? Ralph Waldo Emerson? I believe that was I'm terrible at my poetry. Yeah, so I read that. Yeah. We did the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere on April 19th. On July 4th, I don't know if I've told you this, but I want to invite you also to be one of our readers. We have whoever's interested, and everybody reads a section of the Declaration of Independence. So we're going to do that July 4th, too. So please join us. For a reading, we'll see who wants to go. We may get so many people. Everybody reads like 2 lines each, but that's okay. That'll be fine. All right, let me get to the Concord Hymn. This is Ralph Waldo Emerson, written in 1836, and this is about our war for independence. Everybody calls it a revolutionary war. The revolution was actually the peaceful part, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. The war was an actual war to free us from British occupation and colonialism. And I think people forget that there's actually 2 things going on there. Anyway, this is one of those, it's sort of a rallying cry. It's a little bit of everything. So he wrote, "By the rude bridge that arched the flood, their flag to April's breeze unfurled. Here once the embattled farmer stood and fired the shot heard round the world. The foe long since in silence slept. Alike the conqueror silent sleeps. And time the ruined bridge has swept down the dark stream which seaward creeps. On this green bank, by this soft stream, we today a votive stone, that memory may their dead redeem when, like our sires, our sons are gone. Spirit that made those heroes dare to die and leave their children free, bid time and nature gently spare the shaft we raise to them and thee." So I think there's a memorial at the Old North Bridge in Concord. I'm pretty sure that's what this is about. Still a great poem.
Wow.
Freedom.
It is so, peaceful. Very peaceful in it. A resting in peace.
It's like the opposite of war. it's like, engage in war, rest in peace. I don't know. I hope that's a consolation. I'm not sure, but it's interesting. Let me get you another one here. This is by Edgar Lee Masters. It's from the Civil War, and it's called Jacob Goodpasture. Apparently, there's a lot of poetry that came out of the Civil War. This is actually from, I think, the Battle of Fort Sumter. It says, "When Fort Sumter fell and the war came, I cried out in bitterness of soul, O glorious Republic, now no more. When they buried my soldier son to the call of trumpets and the sound of drums, my heart broke beneath the weight of 80 years, and I cried, O son who died in a cause unjust, in the strife of freedom slain, and I crept here under the grass. And now from the battlements of time, behold, thrice 30 million souls being bound together in the love of larger truth, wrapped in the expectation of the birth of a new beauty, sprung from brotherhood and wisdom, I with eyes of spirit see the transfiguration before you see it. But ye infinite brood of golden eagles nesting ever higher, wheeling ever higher, the sunlight wooing of lofty places of thought, forgive the blindness of the departed owl.
Mm. And the owl sees all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, none of these words are by accident. You know, this is the beauty of poetry, is that you got to think about it. I mean, I'm getting reactions from you quickly, but it's hard to do, because if you're hearing these for the first time, and these are supposed to settle in your brain for a while. You're supposed to wrestle with these concepts, and every word means something. You know, some people write books, yeah. Other people write poems, and sometimes the poem has more impact. It's not the amount of words; it's the words themselves. Here's one. Do you have a comment on that? I mean, I don't want to rush you here, but feel free. And just jump in if I skip to ahead too fast with a poem. Okay, let me give you another one then. Excerpt from The Wound Dresser. This is by Walt Whitman. Bearing the bandages, water and sponge, straight and swift, to my wounded I go. Where they lie on the ground after the battle brought in, where their priceless blood reddens the grass, the ground, or to the rows of the hospital tent, or under the roofed hospital, to the long rows of cots up and down each side I return. To each and all, one after another, I draw near. Not one do I miss. An attendant follows, holding a tray. He carries a refuse pail, soon to be filled with clotted rags and blood, emptied and filled again. Do you want me to stop? There's more.
Wow. Go on, continue.
Wow is right. We can go back over this. Not a problem. See, there's a lot of poems that aren't strictly about combat soldiers. There's a lot of poems. This is The Wound Dresser, so this would be your combat medic. And in the Civil War, people know the Civil War, the horrors of the war. You know, the best doctors were the ones that could amputate a leg the fastest, because they didn't have anesthesia. They didn't have, you know, the modern surgical procedure. Ways to deal with gangrene and infection. And, the medical – people don't realize that so much of our medical knowledge today comes from war.
Exactly.
This is where Chappie would be good. Chappie was Air Force medic, I think 24 years. He does our reports on Friday. Yeah, it's quite fascinating. Let me go on this, and then we can come back over any part of it if you want to. It says, I onward go, I stop, with hinged knees and steady hand to dress wounds. I am firm with each. The pangs are sharp, yet unavoidable. One turns to me his appealing eyes. Poor boy, I never knew you. Yet I think I could not refuse this moment to die for you, if that would save you. On I go. Open doors of time. Open hospital doors. The crushed head I dress. Poor crazed hand, tear not the bandage away. The neck of the cavalryman, with the bullet through and through, I examine. Hard the breathing rattles. Quite dazed already the eye. Yet life struggles hard. Come, sweet death, be persuaded, O beautiful death, in mercy, come quickly. From the stump of the arm, the amputated hand, I undo the clotted lint, remove the slow, this S-L-U-G-H, wash off the matter and blood. Back on his pillow, the soldier bends with curved neck and side, falling head. His eyes are closed, his face is pale, he dares not look upon the bloody stump, and has not yet looked upon it. I dress a wound in the side, deep, deep, but a day or two more, for see the frame all wasted and sinking, and the yellow-blue countenance see. I dress the perforated shoulder, the foot with the bullet wound, cleanse the one with the gnawing and putrid gangrene, so sickening, so offensive, while the attendant stands aside me holding the tray and pail. I'm faithful, I do not give out, the fractured thigh, the knee, the wound in the abdomen, these and more I dress with impassive hand, yet deep in my breast a fire, a burning flame.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. And I think the S-L-O-G-U-G-H is like slough or slew. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Yeah, oh, my God is right. You know, we don't think about the medics. you know, the people that saved the people that went to war. Civil War was particularly disgusting in many ways, and I often wonder if there was a better way to solve it. You know, I despise slavery. I'm not trying to justify this in any way. But if we hadn't gone to war, if we had found a different way, if the South had seceded, and hopefully, you know, slavery would have died on its own. It was dying around the world. And I think we were in the last countries to still have it, ironically, because the cotton gin made it profitable. It's kind of an interesting twist in history. And not that slavery should have gone on one more day longer, but I wonder sometimes if we could have solved this as a nation another way. And I don't think we talk about that very much. Was that the only way to end slavery?
The mindset was not there.
Okay.
See, the thought of it over all them years and years and years, the mindset was not there. It didn't come into existence until I think the Iraqi War or the Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's when people really start to understand it. But we, as a nation, was fighting other people's wars.
Mm-hmm. When did we start fighting other people's wars? When did we start? Because up until the Civil War, we were fighting our own wars.
Yeah, we was fighting that. And we did have the victory.
Mm-hmm. You know, the War for Independence was for us. The Civil War was between us.
Yes.
But the Spanish-American War, the Mexican-American War was for territory. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
So was the Spanish-American War. What was World War I for? Make the world safe for democracy, as Woodrow Wilson said?
Laws and bylaws. Was labeled into.
If we were making the world safe for democracy and the goal of Woodrow Wilson was a world government under the original League of Nations, is that not one of the greatest hypocrisies in history?
Correction.
Okay.
It was more than that. It was deeper than that.
Okay.
Way
please
deeper
tell me.
Than that.
Okay.
It was not only governed by that. It was many, many of different thoughts came into that, that battle. So many was for it and so many was against it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an art of confusion also. But to come
out funny, We ran into World War I and we backed into World War II. It's quite fascinating how this goes. I got people who are listening who are commenting by text. I honestly call the show. I really can't read text and answer text at this particular time. This is a live show and it's meant to be a live show, and it's going to be podcast certainly about another hour and 40 minutes maybe. But the main thing is to join us live. And I want to hear what you think. I want to hear what's on your mind. This is not a place to be passive. This is not a time to be passive. And, you know, this is not a time to worry if someone disagrees with you.
That's okay.
Because freedom's about expressing yourself. You know, you're not right, you're not wrong. Mama B and I talk about things all the time. We have different understandings. We have different knowledge. We have different experiences. We disagree. And yet, combining us together, I think, makes a far greater show, certainly, than me by myself. So I welcome the disagreement. I welcome the challenge. And just because you disagree doesn't mean you have to be disagreeable. Disagreement is what makes us free. So don't be afraid to express an opinion, especially if it's not the same one that I necessarily share or have. B, go ahead, please.
And also me, myself, same way. Because you do have your opinion. That's your rights and duties.
Mm-hmm.
I love
freedom exists in its exercise. Yeah.
Yes, I love to hear that. But I'm going to stick to the guns of mine.
I hope so. See, that's part of it. Part of the responsibility is
disagree with me on certain things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here for that. I'm here to make a difference. And I'm here to stand in the gap of discombobulation of the mind. So, continue.
Oh, there's more. Believe me, there's a lot more. To a Certain Civilian by Walt Whitman. Did you ask dulcet rhymes from me? Did you seek the civilian's peaceful and languishing rhymes? Did you find what I sang erewhile so hard to follow? Why I was not singing erewhile for you to follow, to understand, nor am I now. I have been born of the same as the war was born. The drum corps rattle is ever to me sweet music. I love well the martial dirge, with slow wail and convulsive throb leading the officer's funeral. What to such as you, anyhow, such a poet as I? Therefore, leave my works and go lull yourself with what you can understand and with piano tunes, for I lull nobody, and you will never understand me.
That's the opinion all by itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of these don't need comments. I just find them amazing. This is why, you know, I love and I hate this show. I mean, I do it. I don't know if we did this last year, but just because it has to be done, but it's hard to do it. And that's okay. That's part of my responsibility here. First World War. In the summer of 1914, this is from the website, the war known as the Great War began. It was named World War I when its sequel arrived in 1938. The war killed more than 35 million people before it ended in November of 1918. We've got a story of Wilfred Owen, who presents our first poem. It says, many first war poems were written by soldier poets, that is, soldiers who wrote poetry while in action rather than poets who wrote about soldiers. Chief among the remembered World War I soldier poets is Wilfred Owen. This is what's interesting. So the poems that you have before were written by a lot of people who wrote about soldiers. Now we're going to hear about soldiers who write poetry from combat. And I have to read, this is one of the most famous poems by Wilfred Owen, one of the most famous poems of war. Dulce et decorum est reflects the Latin poet Horace. The phrase dulce et decorum est pro patria man translate as it is sweet and right to die for one's country. Thank you, Horace. Now let me get you the poem by Wilfred Owen. Bent double like old beggars under sacks, knock-kneed, coughing like hags, we cursed through sludge, till on the haunting flames we turned our backs, and towards our distant rest began to trudge. Men marched asleep. Many had lost their boots, but limped on, bloodshod. All went home, all went lame, all blind, drunk with fatigue, deaf even to the hoots of tired, outstripped 5-9s that dropped behind. Gas, gas, quick, boys, an ecstasy of fumbling, fitting the clumsy helmets just in time. But someone still was yelling out and stumbling and floundering like a man in fire or lime. Dim, though the misty panes and thick green light, as under a green sea, I saw him drowning. In all my dreams, before my helpless sight, he plunges at me, guttering, choking, drowning. If in some smothering dreams you too could pace behind the wagon that we flung him in and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face, like a devil sick of sin, if you could hear at every jolt the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, obscene as cancer, bitter as the cud of vile, incurable sores on innocent tongues. My friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie, dulce et decorum est pro patria mori.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's gas. That's a gas attack. And those that weren't able to get their gas masks on in time suffered horribly.
I've got a call. It's not on my official guest list, but that doesn't mean anything. Let me just do a quick check here, see if I recognize who the person is. Doesn't mean, you know, new callers call all the time, too. This is somebody new. So let me just write a number down quickly. B, what do you think of our last poem?
Hello? Oh, wow.
Kind of shocks you. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, it makes you think about the gas, too.
Mm-hmm.
Really strong one. But you died for your country.
The gas was so horrible that even the Nazi atrocity, I mean, the Nazis used gas, I mean, Zyklon B on Jews in the Holocaust. But it's kind of one of the little ironies of history that gas was not used by combat soldiers, as far as I know, in World War II. As horrible as the weapons were, all the way up through the atomic bomb, they didn't use gas against other soldiers, other combatants. Artillery, airplanes, bombs, you name it, machine guns, like I say, everything else in war. But for some reason, the nations decided not to use gas in the next war.
Wow.
Yeah, and then interesting that some things are even too horrible for war. Let me get my caller here. Again, I don't recognize the number, but that doesn't mean anything. Let's give him a chance to join our show here. So, new caller, you're going to hear the sound unmute. You are now live. This is Greg and Mama B. Thomas, and welcome to Action Radio.
Oh, good morning, Greg. This is Pastor Don, Junior CEO. Shout out to the winning team, and I'm just tagging in, man. It's been a long time, so I definitely have to come back.
Okay. Have you had a chance to listen to much of the show, or did you just join us recently?
Just 60 seconds ago, and I'm all ears, and I'm going to tell my friends to come like I always do.
Okay.
Shout out to the winning team. But
good to have you back.
I definitely appreciate the programming.
Okay, good. Well, stick around for a while. Let's what you might want to do is mute yourself when you're not talking, but feel free to join us at any point here. I have more poems. I got to find where they went though. My screen has moved. I have so much stuff this morning. The presentation is pretty wild. All right, let me just do this. I'm just rearranging my screen a little bit. All right, let me see where I wanted to go next here. Let me ask you, Pastor John, Memorial Day, initial thoughts before you even heard anything on the show. What are you doing today? What are your feelings on this? What our military, the sacrifice, our country at this point, anything that you might want to comment on? Did he mute himself? He probably muted himself. That's okay. I'll get you back.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's okay.
I want to give honor to all the people under the sound of my voice that lost their lives, lost loved ones throughout these years with Memorial Day, and the ones who actually, the families. It's very important, the families, because when we send our troops off to war, we at home with the family. So I just want to give honor. My granddad was in the Army. My uncle was in the Army. So this is a special day for me.
Okay. Mama B, I don't know if you know Pastor Don. He calls periodically, usually from Vegas or somewhere around the country. He's a busy guy. So I want to introduce you to.
Hello, Pastor Don. How are you?
How you doing today, Mama?
Fine. Doing wonderful. Great. Right. Celebrating this Memorial Day for special reasons.
Let me get you another poem here. This is by Isaac Rosenberg. We're still in World War I. And so, Don, if you want to go back, when you get a chance after the show, listen to our first hour, and that'll get you caught up, too.
Okay.
Please feel free to share the show. This is a very special day for all of us. I think it's really special is meeting Mama B again to get her on the show and being able to share all these things that we do share here. So this is a poem. This is World War I. This is Break of Day in the Trenches by Isaac Rosenberg. The darkness crumbles away. It is the same old druid time as ever. Only a live thing leaps my hand, a queer, sardonic rat, as I pull the parapet's poppy to stick behind my ear. Droll rat, they would shoot you if they knew your cosmopolitan sympathies. Now you have touched this English hand. You will do the same to a German soon, no doubt, if it be your pleasure, to cross the sleeping green between. It seems you inwardly grin as you pass. Strong eyes, fine limbs, haughty athletes, less chance than you for life. Bonds to the whims of murder, sprawled in the bowels of the earth, the torn fields of France. What do you see in our eyes? At the shrieking iron and flame hurled through still heavens? What quiver? What heart aghast? Poppies whose roots are in man's veins drop and are ever dropping. But mine in the ear is safe, just a little white with the dust.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah. Pastor Don, I think we're getting a little background from your line. So, like I say, just mute your phone between when you're chatting, and that way I can get through these poems. This is going to be a tough day. I'm going to collapse at the end of this. I have a feeling there's a lot going on here. But think about this. Okay, so this is written in the trenches. This is written in the trenches on the Western Front in World War One. And if you see poppies on what used to be Remembrance Day, Armistice Day, is now Veterans Day, November 11th. This is the day the war ended, the 11th day, the 11th hour of the 11th month. And there's a place in Australia, I remember this when I was a kid in Melbourne, and it's the war memorial for the Anzacs. It's a World War One memorial, and it has a brick removed. And it's that one specific brick that on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month of the year, the sun, if it's shining, shines through that brick and lights up a memorial. It only happens, you know, for the time that the sun is shining through that particular brick. It's quite fascinating. And it's sort of like, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, where the sun comes through, hits the ruby and everything bright. It's not quite that much. But that's just one of those places. And so, you know, growing up in Canada and Australia, you know, we had different knowledge. I remember as a kid in Canada, the poppies, and I never quite knew the poppies. But until I read this poem, I didn't realize that the poppies were right there. And this is what the soldiers are doing. So here they are with the barbed wire and the machine guns and generals ordering cavalry charges from the previous war, you know, and the gas and everything else. And yet there are poppies growing in the trenches. There are poppies growing in the no man's land between the trenches. You know, this beauty, even in one of the greatest destructive times in history, the Western Front, where literally millions of young men were killed by other young men, you know, fighting for their country. And yet the poppies grow there, and that's the symbol that we retain from World War One.
Wow. My God.
Yeah. And we're still World War One. Let's keep going.
Wow.
Pastor Don, like I say, feel free to comment. You don't have to comment every poem, but I'll just give you the option. I may mute you if I hear background on your line. I know you might be driving or something like that. So it's only because I want to get the best recording I can today.
Amen. Amen. Well, that was definitely a deep poem, and the one thing I can hear is the person feeling, and that's what stood out the most about the poem to me, because mm-hmm. everybody's going through something different when they're at war. So for them to come on and write something like that was deep. That's what I personally feel.
You know, it's interesting you say that because, you know, we think of a collective experience, you know, the army that went to battle, the soldiers that fought in a particular place, but it really is an individual experience for everybody. That's a good point. And yet they try and homogenize the military into one unit. And yet military, I don't care what happens, you know, the military is made up of individuals.
Amen.
Yeah. Let me get you another one. Here's one of the most famous poems from World War One. Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae. It's called In Flanders Fields. You may have heard this one before. In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow between the crosses row on row that mark our place. And in the sky, the larks still bravely singing fly. Scarce heard amid the guns below, we are the dead. Short days ago, we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe, to you from failing hands we throw. The torch be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields.
You know, it's so much that was in the mind of our soldiers at war.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be combat ready all the time. There was no letting up. You always had to be vigilant.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be careful wherever you stepped. And the mind had to be set to continue.
You know, when you think of soldiers coming back, you know, it's easy to understand why soldiers have such a tough time, you know, going back to the life that they lived before. And people expect them, well, now that you come back from battle, I want you to be the guy, you know, I went out drinking with, or the, you know, the spouse, or the partner, or you're supposed to be the same person. And I don't think you can be the same person based on what we're reading here. And this is still World War One.
You can't. You couldn't. Because terror had terrorized the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Of what was set up on the battlefield. There's no way that the mind could be set back where it was when you left to go to the battle. It was a lot. And their stories was true. And the heartbreak of seeing all of this to come back, it just never can be explained.
You know, I wonder if one of the best things we can do is to listen to soldiers. I mean, a lot of times they don't want to talk about things, but maybe they have to. And I'm perfectly willing to listen. This is why I do shows like this, so that I can listen. But I think even in our everyday lives, if a soldier wants to tell you a story, listen to them. You don't have to pass judgment. Just listen to them.
Yeah.
Listen to what they have to say. Maybe the act of listening could save their lives. I think that's worth listening.
It is.
Yeah.
Very much so. I used to go to, I was stationed. It was in San Antonio, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Sam Houston Hospital. And walking through there, and sometimes I'll just sit and think, and I hear all of these war stories.
Mm-hmm.
Old buddies hooking up with each other, and the buddies that was lost in battle. And I would observe what they be saying. And some would sit there with no arms, no legs.
Mm-hmm. See, that to me is the greatest tragedy of Afghanistan and Iraq. You know, are the soldiers we lost, but especially the soldiers that came back, you know, without something. You know, arms, legs.
Face disfigured.
Traumatic brain damage, burns. You know, and I hate to ask this question, but I have to. You know, I look at the policies of our country, and I think to myself, you know, what changed because we went to Iraq and Afghanistan? What freedom have we gained? What, you know, what have we preserved? What of our liberty? What of the reasons that, you know, our nation needed defending, or did it need defending? And was that sacrifice worth it for those soldiers who lost whatever they lost? My answer is no. But I don't want to take away from their sacrifice. So I honor them, and I dishonor the people that sent them there.
My mind was from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why? With double question marks. Why?
Mm-hmm.
I need an answer. Why?
We need to ask the question. Before you can get an answer, people have to start asking the question. I'll tell you the first place, Ukraine. Why?
That is it. That mm-hmm. really is. That is my question to my answer. Why?
And don't tell me money. You know, if that's the answer, if it's the permanent war class is getting control and making money off this, if the banks who are loaning to the government, if the military contractors are making the weapons, if the investors are investing in both sides, like World War II, you know, I think Ford made tanks for Germany before Germany, you know, declared war on everybody. You know, it's just, there's got to be a better reason for that. Well, there is a better reason, but what I'm saying is, you know, if it comes down to money, if that's what these people want, the permanent war class, then we need to do something about the permanent war class, not war. Let me read you another one here. Dreamers. Siegfried Sassoon, another poet from World War I. Soldiers are citizens of death's gray land, drawing no dividend from time's tomorrows. In the great hour of destiny they stand, each with his feuds and jealousies and sorrows. Soldiers are sworn to action. They must win. Some flaming, fatal climax with their lives. Soldiers are dreamers when the guns begin. They think of firelit homes, clean beds, and wives. I see them in foul dugouts, gnawed by rats, and in the ruined trenches, lashed with rain, dreaming of things they did with balls and bats, and mocked by hopeless longing to regain bank holidays and picture shows and sports and going to the office in the train.
And some, they dreamed it.
Mm-hmm.
But they never could live it.
Yeah.
What they left behind.
Well, that's the question. You know, it's interesting that, you know, they dream, people dream, most people dream of winning the lottery here or of wealth, you know, usually unworked for or some huge benefit. Soldier dreams are just having a normal life again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of commuting on a
you
train.
You dig holes to lay in to keep shells from coming over you. And all of those things, it's amazing. It's just amazing.
Have you studied the trenches at all? You know, of all the inhumanity, the whole idea of trench warfare absolutely staggers my imagination. I don't understand it for a second. I'm thinking, you know, from a military perspective, could you not have gone around the trenches? You know, because nobody was going through. I mean, no man's land literally was destroyed. I mean, the shells were, I mean, the holes from the previous shells were being made by new shells. I mean, it never stopped for years. They went back and forth, I think, a few hundred yards in all of World War One.
Mm-hmm.
These trenches that is the definition of mindless insanity.
And some unknown come back without a name,
mm-hmm,
a social security number, or nothing. Unknown to their own country.
Yeah.
Unknown.
Let me move on to Carl Sandburg here. Carl Sandburg is fascinating to me because of his predictions, of his almost his prophecy in this poem called Wars. Carl Sandburg from the website 1878 to 1967. So he was around for quite a while. An American poet who wrote poems about war during World War I and World War II. His poetry is among the most famous in American literature. So he wrote this in 1916. So we're still in World War I. He said, "Wars. In the old wars, drum of hooves and beat of shod feet. In the new wars, hum of motors and the tread of rubber tires. In the wars to come, silent wheels and whir of rods, not yet dreamed out in the heads of men. In the old wars, clutches of short swords and jabs into faces with spears. In the new wars, long-range guns and smashed walls, guns running a spit of metal, and men falling in the tens and twenties. In the wars to come, new silent deaths, new silent hurlers, not yet dreamed out in the heads of men. In the old wars, kings quarreling and thousands of men following. In the new wars, kings quarreling and millions of men following. In the wars to come, kings kicked under the dust, and millions of men following great causes not yet dreamed out in the heads of men." You know, he wrote this before. Donnie, I gotta mute you for just a little bit, just because your lines. Or are you driving, Pastor Don? We're getting some background noise. I'm really gonna try and limit that, especially.
No, I'm sorry. I was on mute. I'm not driving.
Okay, well, as long as you're mute, that's okay. But I'm trying to. Anyway, what this poem means to me, when you look at it, it really is fortuitous what happens, you know, from horses and horseshoes to motors and rubber tires. You know, what's going to come next? You know, so he's looking at warfare. So in other words, warfare endures, but the weapons change. The war doesn't change. The mentality doesn't change. The weapons change. You know, from short swords to spears to long-range guns. And he talks about a spit of metal and men falling in 10s and 20s, and then new silent hurlers, you know, and men fall in the millions. You know, not yet dreamed out. So in other words, the dreams continue with new weapons.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is this last part. He says, in the wars to come, kings kicked under the dust. In other words, it's a new form of government, right? And millions of men following great causes not yet dreamed out in the heads of men. Well, there's Hitler and Stalin and Mao, and there's Marxism. And this is a year before the Russian Revolution. It's almost like he saw that the kings, the aristocracy, the monarchy was being replaced by the ideology of Marxism and Nazism.
He was
fascism.
Coming into the future. Yes, and he was coming into the future of
mm-hmm.
each. He was coming to the future of each demenia that was happening before
mm-hmm.
his eyes. He prophesied those things because they came to him
mm-hmm.
in truth and justice. And he was looking into the future. But then he wasn't going to come into it, but his vision was. Without a vision, the people will perish. He was a man used by God to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Not his flesh, but the Spirit of God to write that. Because as he goes and as you read it, it's in each section of time that was taking
mm-hmm.
place. And it still is. Look at what's going on now with the jab under demand. And stuff you never heard of before in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Look at in the age, how the age of the generation have came into course, where man have took God out of his heart, some have, and thinking they are the God. So when they create things to come, and we never experienced this. Even the ones that already have left this earth and
mm-hmm.
resting for their special place, if they make it and if they don't. Even now, people will say, and I've heard this, in their 70s, in their 80s, in their 90s,
mm-hmm.
and they will say, daughter, I'd never heard or experienced anything like this before in my life of what's going on now. Where did all of this come from? The Bible has to be fulfilled
yeah.
in prophecies. You understand where I'm coming from with that?
I do, but I also... You know, I have a sort of an internal, I guess, struggle and need to fight for freedom. And I'm hoping that that's in the prophecy, that our prophecy is freedom and that we can.
That's what this is all about.
Okay.
It's wrapped around that. But
mm-hmm.
listen
okay.
carefully. The enemy will distract the mind of those that want to do it, but fear come upon them for speaking out. The fear come upon this nation because it had to get in a distraction because Christians with values sit their behinds down and allowed all kind of interpretation of the word of God to come in. Some of them said there is no God. Some of them say there is no Jesus. There is no Mother Mary. There is none of that. And then they bring their agendas in to try to please the mind of the people that are weak. He looked into the future, not him, not him himself, not his flesh. It was him as an individual in the spirit of God. God will give man knowledge, but he told you to never think that that is your God. You got to be wise. You got to have some wisdom. And you got to have something that is knowing that you sure you are who you are and not a sellout to the enemy.
That's for sure.
Got to come on one accord. You remember, look at this. You look at this every day. You
mm-hmm.
handle this every day.
Mm-hmm.
On our dollar bills, what does it say? What does it say
in God
on
we
our
trust?
Money?
Yeah, it says Federal Reserve note.
Okay.
Not just teasing you, but it says in God we trust. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them that took that, they want that off the money too. They're planning on taking that off the money. This man was into the future of what he seen. And he put it in what? He wrote the vision. Rebecca tells us to write the vision and make it plain. Okay, he did that.
Yeah.
But we have to have understanding and knowledge of what is going on around us. We have to pray for that. We have to make sure that we have to kill our flesh on fleshy things and follow the tune of the of what Christ would have us to do. And I loved it, that one, because it was telling the stages of time. Time is a valuable thing. Time. And it all goes around with war. And our word of God say there will be rumors of wars in places you never imagined. But when you set people in the front line of the enemy, somebody must have some kind of discernment to know this is not our battle. Somebody got to take charge of making sure that our bylaws and the laws of our land be done upright. Justice and mercy. We have to cry out now for America like never, ever before. Because America allowed all of these different types of distractions to come in. And leaders, that includes those that are in charge of Congress, that includes the churches, that includes the priests, all of these peoples,
mm-hmm.
ministers, all of them should have stopped some of this foolishness, but they did not.
No, they complied. I don't
right.
comply.
Exactly.
I've been resisting, and I have, but I see that as my duty. That's my responsibility as a citizen. Part of citizenship means knowing when to resist, knowing when the time has come for you to stand up and be counted, knowing that there may be personal risk involved. There may be things that bad things may happen. They may happen to me, but the idea is already out there. It's too late. It's too late for those that despise the freedom that we're talking about here every day, because everybody knows that a citizen legislature exists. Well, that not everybody, but then they'll know, that what we do here exists and that it works and that people can write the laws that they consent to be governed by. This isn't going to go away. It doesn't matter what happens to me at this point. I've already planted the seeds. It's already there. Too many people know about what we do here. And so I already have my victory. So when people say, how many laws have you passed? It doesn't matter. I've already got my victory. The idea is out there. People know.
Thank you.
Realize the potential.
It's like
seeing messengers. Yeah, oh, you're welcome. I couldn't help it. I believe in freedom. It's just, See, to me, it wasn't a choice. This was not a choice. This was an obligation that I freely accepted. Without
you
mental reservation or a purpose of evasion.
This.
Go ahead.
And you were chosen to do this. And what it was.
Yeah.
The enemy seen it was tapping on their Kool-Aid in their flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to ridicule you. You suffered, but you won't be suffering no more because
well,
you're
struggle.
Doing the duty that you were assigned to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you couldn't get people to see your side of it
mm-hmm.
because they laughed at it and made fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's remember the time when they was making fun of the one that God sent, and they did it through children. Children was making fun of it, and Pastor Don would know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's bringing back on the conversation,
they made
too.
Fun.
Yeah.
They made fun of this prophet, and they laughed. It was funny to them. And bears came out of nowhere and ate them up. The same thing goes for the little ones. The same thing goes for the adults.
Pastor Don?
A lot.
I'm sorry, B.
Yes, sir.
A lot.
Yeah.
They ridiculed them, and not only they ridiculed them and cast lots, after they ridiculed him. So it was like it was bad on his clothes, and it was a horrific event. Not only was it a horrific event, but it's sad when people are all ganging up on one person and just ridiculing them and telling them how bad they are instead of trying to pick them up. And I personally believe that we as a people, we tend to focus on negative, but when something's positive, we don't have anything to talk about. You know, if a gunman goes out and kills 100 people, that's going to be on the news every 5 minutes. But if somebody helps 100 people, nobody wants to talk about that. You know, so I'm loving this topic of discussion. I'm loving the way y'all bringing out these points. This is a great idea. Good show.
Oh. Yeah, I've done it a couple of times before, but never with such participation. Usually it's just me reading people calling in. I'm getting a little beep in the background on one of your lines. Let me get you another one here.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get through as much as I wanted to get through, but I always have extra poems just because. And I'll post these websites if anybody wants to read more. This is Carl Sandburg again, written in 1916. It's called Killers. I am singing to you, soft as a man with a dead child speaks, hard as a man in handcuffs, held where he cannot move. Under the sun are 16 million men chosen for shining teeth, sharp eyes, hard legs, and a running of young, warm blood in their wrists. And a red juice runs on the green grass, and a red juice soaks the dark soil, and the 16 million are killing and killing and killing. I never forget them, day or night. They beat on my head for memory of them. They pound on my heart, and I cry back to them, to their homes and women, dreams and games. I wake in the night and smell the trenches and hear the low stir of sleepers in lines, 16 million sleepers and pickets in the dark, some of them long sleepers for always, some of them tumbling to sleep tomorrow for always, fixed in the drag of the world's heartbreak, eating and drinking, toiling on a long job of killing 16 million men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. Let me,
wow.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I bet you don't hear these. Your typical Memorial Day addresses, but you need to hear these. This is what people need to hear. I don't know how else to do it other than to, you know, put this down and have it in a podcast. But if you really, especially if you take the, I'm going to listen to this show at some point later and reflect back on it. B, I'm sure you'll do the same, Pastor Don, I'm sure the same. But and all the folks who are listening now, but you take the total impact of this, you're going to start questioning a whole lot of things. You're not going to look at Ukraine the same way. You're not going to look at Afghanistan or Iraq the same way. You're not going to look at Vietnam the same way. World War One, World War Two, the Spanish-American War, the War for Independence, the Civil War. You're not going to look at any of these things the same way. You're not going to look at the conquerors, the glory, you know, Napoleon riding across the battlefield. You're not going to look at it the same way. You can't. Because now you know the people who are there. And that's the real purpose of today. Let me get you one from the Spanish Civil War. It's something people don't think of a lot because it mostly affected Spain. Franco versus the Republicans, those that wanted freedom. And there's this is where Pablo Picasso made one of his most famous pictures. It's the town of Guernica. Now, Guernica, let me see what it says here. Pablo Picasso painted Guernica in reaction to Nazi Germany's bombing of Guernica, seen on April 26, 1937, during the Spanish Civil War. The airstrike killed 16,054 civilians. Picasso's painting is the emblem of war's innocent victims. So I believe this is the first case where civilians were targeted for bombing for no other reason that they were just targeted. This is what changed warfare, that it was okay to bomb cities. See, World War One, most of the war was in the trenches. Most of the combatants, the people who died were combatants. You know, they weren't people back in the cities, back home. So the war was kind of sheltered in a way from a lot of people, unless you were there at the front. Nazi Germany changed all that when they bombed Guernica, and all of a sudden cities became legitimate targets. Yeah, there were bombers in World War One, but it wasn't quite the same thing as the Henkels and Dorniers and Junkers that flew over Guernica. Still getting a bit of noise in the background. Yeah, that's just the intro of the poem. I haven't even poem yet. You know, we'll take a break in a couple minutes too. I'll give you all a chance to I'll take a break. Guernica by Norman Rosten. That's Rosten. In Guernica, the dead children were laid out in order on the sidewalks in their white starched dresses, in their pitiful white dresses. On their foreheads and breasts are the little holes where death came in as thunder while they were playing their important summer games. Do not weep for them, madre. They are gone forever, the little ones, straight to heaven to the saints, and God will fill the bullet holes with candy. Let's get to World War II. And again, Pastor Don, feel free to jump right in if you have a comment. Here's one here. Keith Douglas, as we enter World War II poetry. It says here, many people ask why there are fewer poems from World War II compared to the First World War. The answer is simply that most of the poets and their poems did not survive the conflict. What we do have for World War II poetry is no less remarkable and documents the struggles of a different generation. Many of the World War II poets were children of World War I soldiers and grew up with stories of the Great War all around them. And we've got a bunch of poems from here. Here's one by Keith Douglas. Keith Douglas was already a published poet while studying at Oxford when the war began. He served almost 3 years before he was killed in action at Normandy. That would be D-Day, folks. He was 24. He says, aristocrats. A little bit of background noise. Let me start again. Aristocrat by Keith Douglas. The noble horse with courage in his eye, clean in the bone, looks up at the shell burst. Away fly the images of the shires, but he puts the pipe back in his mouth. Peter was unfortunately killed by an 88. It took his leg away, died in the ambulance. I saw him crawling on the sand. He said, it's most unfair. They've shot my foot off. How can I live among this gentle, obsolescent breed of heroes and not weep? Unicorns, almost, for they are fading into two legends in which their stupidity and chivalry are celebrated. Each fool and hero will be an immortal. These plains where were their cricket pitch, and in the mountains the tremendous drop fences brought down some of the runners. Here then, under the stones and earth, they dispose themselves. I think with their famous unconcern. It is not gunfire I hear, but a hunting horn. And that was the difference in the wars in previous generations, the aristocrats, those that never fought, that ordered others to fight. You know, I have a lot more respect for a general that fought and then ordered others to fight than a general who never fought at all.
You know what? That's exactly how I see things, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly.
Yeah.
Sad but true.
Yeah, but this is an important thing. And again, this is, you know, nobody wishes anybody a happy Memorial Day, and this is why. This is not supposed to be, you know, a singing and dancing in the streets holiday. But have no fear. When we get to Independence Day, we are going to celebrate, and we're going to celebrate our freedom. But today we need to understand how we got there.
But look at this, too. What really troubles me, we know our soldiers fought and died.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the lesbian and the pride of pulling our beach on today to celebrate themselves all the way down, all the way down to Key West?
Mm-hmm.
All the hotels are full for that. But
yeah,
you don't have room for our veterans. Some are veterans that are out there. But what are we really celebrating?
Well, we're memorializing. We're not celebrating. But you're absolutely right. I thought of this too. You know, it's like the Washington's Day, you know, car sale. Or the July 4th, you know, barbecue grill sale. You're missing the point. You're commercializing. It's like, you know, Christmas is presents and wrapping. It has nothing to do with Jesus. You know, Easter is the bunny, you know, not the crucifixion and the resurrection. You know, people miss. These days are holy days, not holidays. There's a difference. And unless you honor the holy day, you're missing the point of the holiday.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And been doing this for years, years after mm-hmm. years after years.
So we got a friend of yours and someone I have not met, but I'm very curious to hear from Jennifer Carroll, former mm-hmm. Lieutenant Governor of Florida. Welcome to Action Radio. We got Mama B, we got Pastor Don, and you got me. I'm Greg. Good morning. Your line's live.
Did she pick up?
I don't know. Let's see. So I wrote my number wrong. You know what? It's a different number. It's the same area code. I made a mistake. Okay, well, now that we got you here, 904 area code. Let me go to you. Welcome to Action Radio. First name, where are you calling from?
Good morning. This is Kayan Michael. Good morning to everyone. I would love
I to. How come your number's not on my guest list? You know what? I didn't look at my guest list. Yeah, okay, well, I just promoted you. Sorry, Kaya.
Wow.
It's
what
funny because, you know, I expect you to come to the show too today, too. So I'm a little emotionally rattled because all the stuff I've been going through the last while here. I should have checked my regular master list. My mistake. So let's put you in here. Welcome to the show. Did you have a chance to listen before, or are you just kind of joining us now?
I just joined on now, but I did hear you all speak about just the sovereignty and the heavy of heartness that we have when we think about Memorial Day, because it is remembering those who have paid the ultimate price who are no longer with us. I know locally here in Jacksonville, we had a World War III veteran, Soli, that went home to be with the Lord that we miss tremendously. He was, I believe, 102 years old. And
oh my goodness.
We think of people like him who he served, and he was so committed in his community. There was birthday celebrations for him, and he really had a lot of strength left and a lot of vitality in his health, and God really blessed this man. But to have the honor to sit down and hear his stories, because I think that it takes it another step forward when we just stop and listen while we still have our military veterans with us, while we still have our military personnel with us, to not just say thank you for your service, but tell me what did you do? Tell me what was it like? Tell me some of the things that you encounter. Yeah. And they light up because they love to be able to share their history, their stories, what they've gone through. And now he's no longer here, so now we do remember him as well as many and many others.
Did you record his stories? Did you get to record his stories?
I did not have a recorder on me. There were so many people trying to get his stories, and that's something I regret. I'll tell you, I missed
cell
that
phone. Just start the cell phone. You know, I don't know if they record. Yeah. See, there's Smithsonian History Projects to do that. First of all, my apologies for mistaking you. You are on my master list. I just, I checked my guest list and, you know, just assumed that you were a new caller. So my mistake's there. Kyan's been on the show before. And I'm going to have you on to talk politics another time. But let's just tell folks, you know, the office you're running for and, and just so that people know who you are.
Oh, sure. I am running for House District, State House in the state of Florida, House District 16 here in Jacksonville, Florida.
There you go. Do you have a website or a Facebook page?
Sure. My website is Kyan, K-I-Y-A-N, Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L.com. And if they go to that website, they're able to find out what my platform is, which is, of course, veterans. My husband's a veteran. He's out and about right now, as a matter
sure
of fact.
Yeah.
Of course, it's immigration. It's our children, protecting our children. And I just wanted to call in because I couldn't allow this time to pass without remembering those who gave us our freedom, who fought for our freedom, and they paid the ultimate price. And we cannot neglect that, and I know that you all are not, and many are not. I won't be barbecuing today. I'll be in prayer. I'll be out campaigning as well and remembering those that are no longer with us. But we value them. We value their families that are left behind. So thank you for allowing me to call in.
And we'll stick around for a while. You know, we've got another 42 minutes. We got to, I think you'll find this quite fascinating. If you get a chance to listen to and share the original couple of hours, one of the things that Mama B and I talked about, especially, and we got Pastor Don here too, is that it's our duty to defend the military as much as the military is defending us. And so we're going to talk not a whole lot today about this, but in subsequent days, especially in terms of, the snake oil jab vaccine and some other things, you know, like I say, the more political stuff. But I believe, and I didn't really think of this until today, that we really have a duty to protect our military so they can protect us. But there really is a relationship between us, the citizen, and the military. And as military people are citizens who go to the military, they're still citizens, but there's a separation, there's a difference, obviously, because they are serving in ways that citizens don't. But citizens have every bit as much of a duty to serve as well, and part of that duty includes protecting our military from unconstitutional orders. And so we need to talk about that. I wanted to get your response to that, and then I got another poem for you called Troop Train. Again, this is World War II. Kyan?
Yes.
What do you think?
My husband served 20 years in the Navy, for those who have not heard me speak before. And so, and there is a huge need to support our military, active duty in retiree, because especially when you're active duty, you're disconnected from the communities because with the Navy, you move around so much.
Yeah.
Every 4 years, you're someplace different. And so, we often fall privy to not knowing what's going on politically. If we were to bring politics into this and talk about politics,
no, we will.
We're not there long enough.
Yeah, we'll definitely
bring that in. To talk, to know who's who and what's going on. And so we have to, I was really challenged because part of my district, my now new formerly district, includes the Mayport Military Base. And of course, Florida is, we're honored and we're privileged to be home to so much military family here, so many military bases here. So we're right at home. I wanted to reach the military bases. It's a challenge because I know, as the same when my husband was active duty, you just don't know who's who. You're not really active in what's going on. They don't know who to vote for, so they often don't vote. And it's because we cannot reach them. We can't get the information to them. By the time they do get involved and get vested in, then it's time to move on to another duty station. So I've been really challenging myself to come up with some type of way to bridge that gap between our active duty, because they are the reason why we are voting. I mean, they are a large part of the reason why we have the right to vote and why it's so important that we vote, because as we just saw with the pandemic that we just went through, we couldn't protect them from having their rights to say, no, I may not want to get that shot.
Oh, we're not done. That battle's not over yet. No, there's a lot more to do on that. Let me I want you to get to the sum up of it. I got some more poems I want to cover as we go through this, and I'm curious your reaction to them and your husband's reaction if you get a chance to listen to the podcast. So let me did you want to finish or we pretty much covered that? I don't want to shortchange you here.
It.
Okay. Let's go to Carl Shapiro, who served U.S. Pacific during World War II, died at the age of 86 in the year 2000. Apparently, he was quite prolific in his poetry, but there's one that I remember from years past called Troop Train. And it goes, "It stops the town we come through. Workers raise their oily arms in a good salute and grin. Kids scream as at a circus. Businessmen glance hopefully and go their measured way. And women standing at their dumbstruck door more slowly wave and seem to warn us back, as if a tear blinding the course of war might once dissolve our iron in their sweet wish. Fruit of the world, O clustered on ourselves, we hang as from a cornucopia in total friendliness, with faces bunched to spray the streets with catcalls and with leers. A bottle smashes on the moving ties, and eyes fixed on a lady smiling pink, stretched like a rubber band and snap and sting, the mouth that wants the drink of water kiss. And on though crummy continents and days, deliberate, grimy, slightly drunk we crawl, the good bad boys of circumstance and chance, whose bucket helmets bang the empty wall, where twist the murdered bodies of our packs next to the guns that only seem themselves, and distance like a strap adjusted shrinks, tightens across the shoulder and holds firm. Here is a deck of cards. Out of this hand, dealer, deal me my luck, a pair of bulls, the right draw to a flush, the one-eyed jack. Diamonds and hearts are red, but spades are black, and spades are spades, and clubs are clovers, black. But deal me winners, souvenirs of peace. This stands to reason, and arithmetic also travels, and not all come back. Trains lead to ships, and ships to death on trains, and trains to death or trucks, and trucks to death, or trucks lead to the march to death, or that survival which is all our hope, and death leads back to trucks and trains and ships. But life leads to the march. O flag, at last, the place of life found after trains and death, nightfall of nations brilliant after war."
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Miss Michaels?
It's beautiful, and it's very profound. What our military and our armed forces, what they encounter, it's just, how can we ever say thank you enough? Are there enough words to even say? Can we even relay what they endure? I just fall, I fall short of even having the word to follow behind that. It's so profound.
Yeah, we've been doing this all morning. This has been an amazing day, but yeah, you're absolutely right. And the bigger question is, how can we create a situation where they don't have to go? Who's making the decisions? Who in the permanent war class is sending these people, that makes them, and they're willing to sacrifice? I mean, God bless the military for doing what they do, but shame on us for having them being put in a position where they have to do what they do. Comments?
Absolutely. You know what? I don't know mm-hmm. if that was open for me to answer.
Sure. The whole discussion. My show is always open for you for anybody to answer, so feel free.
I'll tell you one of the things that bothers me at night that I really don't sleep well. I have to really pray myself through is knowing that it's very possible that we could be leading to a third world war.
Mm-hmm.
And it's troubling because not long ago we were leading everything. Not long ago the world knew not to even try us. Don't even try to bother with our military. Don't even try. They were forewarned. I don't know if they thought he was crazy or if they just knew that he was a man of his word. But when Trump said, "Do not, if they come near you, blow them out of the water," I believe they knew that he meant that. So the fact that we could possibly be forming or going into being drafted or pulled into a third world war that we should not be. These are our young men and women. And we know that in any war, we are going to lose some. And we need them here. Our protection needs to be first and foremost. I mean, we know that their jobs are around the world, but we can't police the entire world, especially when our country
is falling
apart.
Well, we're not supposed to police the entire world. Well, let me ask you a question. Knowing what you know now, knowing that once the war started, it's really hard to stop it, knowing that things, you know, the fog of war, once the flag is committed, you know, and the drums start beating and the trumpets start wailing, and I got some background noise. Please mute yourself if you're not talking, only because, you know, like I say, it'll greatly help our audio here so people can listen to it. But the thing is, the time to stop the next war is now. The time to question the next war is now. The time for the veterans groups and the soldiers and the active military, they can't. And they're supposed to be political. I understand that. But the time for all of us to stand up and the churches to stand up and Hollywood to stand up, oh, please, you know, and everybody to stand up and say, wait a minute, let's talk about this. Who should decide, you know, do we rest all power in a commander-in-chief to declare war? No, we have a Congress to declare war, and yet they don't do it. So let's start asking those questions. Those are the questions that we need to ask now before it's too late, before we do have the World War III. And let's see if we can prevent it so that the people, the soldiers, don't have to go. Let's go, everybody, around the – let's go with Cayenne and then Mama B and then Pastor Don. Then I got two new callers joining us.
Cayenne? Absolutely. The time to prevent it is now. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that our military, because we are so – we've been driven through this administration to be so we have so much fear factor and everything. We see what happened to the Marine Corps corporal that spoke out and that questioned the withdrawal of how we withdrew out of Afghanistan. He was court-martialed. I mean, this is what they're having to
do. You mean the surrender?
That's something we would have never heard of. Yeah, that just wouldn't have happened before. Mm-hmm. So they're dealing with that. What will be the blowback? What's going to be the issue? What's going to be the problem? Will they be able to retire with their military retirement? Will they be stripped? In his case, he was stripped of all of everything, of his retirement. He's fighting. So
let me ask you a bigger question.
You know, they,
go ahead. Uh-huh. Here's a bigger question, and I'll get our panel, then I'll bring in our two new callers here, because we only have half an hour left, and I have so much more to go, we might continue this another time. But here's the bigger question. Considering the fact that this is an illegitimate administration, you'll never hear me say Biden administration or President Biden. I know that we've been through a coup. I know that there's an illegal person sitting in the White House. I know that although they are the person who's normally there is commander-in-chief, and I'll challenge that sometimes unless we have a declared war. But how can this person order anybody to go anywhere when he's not even a legitimate president? And why is in the military standing up and saying this person is not commander-in-chief? He has no business being there. And I'm talking about the soldiers who are active duty. I'm talking about the veterans, the people that did serve, the people that can say something, that do have the microphone, and the candidates. Every candidate should be saying this is not a legitimate administration. He can't send anybody anywhere. He is not the commander-in-chief. Where's that call? I think I stumped my panel.
No.
Anybody want to take that on? Mama B?
You're absolutely right. And the saddest part about it, we don't know who's running the country.
No, I got some ideas. I'll give my quick synopsis. Barack Obama's running the foreign policy. Hillary Clinton's running the domestic policy. They've divided the country.
All that's going to come to an end, baby.
Let's see what happens.
All that is going to come to an end because we serve an almighty God. We got to get ourselves back on track with God.
Oh, I agree with you, but you know, I'm calling on God to like move up the timetable. Let's get a new caller in here.
I'm gonna say something though.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Who they put over the military? The interest of him and himself only. They believe in the power of manipulating the system. I hope some of my friends that are on this line, that are military, we know how it works, will answer some of the questions and how they feel about it. Because this right here have never been heard of in our whole entire life. God knows it have not. Our military be scrutinized in open public. Never.
Yeah.
Never. And if somebody on this call can answer the different way, I want to hear your voice. Please be free to come on.
Yeah, I had to mute people because I had a background noise. I think it was Cayenne's line. Folks, please, we need you to mute when you're not talking, because if you don't, then we're going to hear everything that happens in the background. Every paper rustling, every cough, every everything comes through. And so I'll make you live again. But please, like I say, mute your line unless you're actually chatting. Let's get a well, – actually, let me bring in one of our new callers. We're sort of – I can't believe we've got 3 hours show. We're running out of time. So let's get our new local call here. And, of course, I'm in Milton, Florida, so this would be in our local area code. Welcome to Action Radio. New caller. Going once, going twice. 850 area code. Okay, I'll put
you back
on.
Amen. God bless you. Just listening and taking it all in and believing that God is going to do something great.
Okay.
Amen.
Can we get your first name, where you're calling from, or do you want to stay anonymous?
Desiree, Tallahassee.
Welcome to the show. All right. Excellent. Let's try our next call. Another probably in the Cayenne's neighborhood. Another new caller. Welcome to Action Radio. If you heard it,
yes,
say unmute.
Yes, good morning. My name
that's
is
you.
Bobby Michael. How are you doing?
Hello, Bobby Michael. What's on your mind, sir?
Well, I just jumped in the call, so I believe Ma B had a question. I didn't catch it all because I was hearing some background noise as well.
Okay.
Can you repeat the question?
That would be you, Greg.
I don't remember. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Let me move on to another. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
I think the question was, who is really running our military, and why are our military being scrutinized? And Bobby is a veteran. Yes, Kyan's husband. So
oh, okay. Well, welcome to the show, sir. Yeah. Oh, see, now it makes sense. All right. So the other question I had is who in the military or which veteran is going to stand up and say that this person sitting in the White House is not the commander in chief? Who's going to have the guts to do that and say this is an illegitimate government? We do not take orders from this person. They cannot order, you know, vaccine mandates. They cannot send soldiers into battle. This is wrong, and we have to change this. Who's going to do that? Bobby? Yeah, and you don't have to answer it. You know, I'm just putting you in the spot right now, but feel free to let me know what you think.
Well, first of all, we do have an illegitimate government right now. The 2020 election was stolen. And I believe there's going to be a massive red wave coming to midterms, but we've already started the process by identifying the bad actors within our government, and we have to put them on notice. And second of all, we have to identify the grassroots candidates that's running both for the primary and the midterms. We can't wait until the 2024 election to get a legitimate president in there. So we have to act once we take the House and the Senate back, and we have to hold the bad actors accountable and start sending people to prison for breaking our laws. That's the only way you're going to turn this thing around.
Oh, I'm with you completely. My biggest fear, though, is that the deep state already has their operatives in place, Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell, and that it doesn't matter who wins. That or how many, what would the Republican gains are? If you get another Paul Ryan, you know, also known as Kevin McCarthy, it's not going to make a hill of beans worth of difference. And that's my biggest fear. Let me get you another poem here. I want to, we have limited time. I'm going to skip around a little bit. This one comes from the Holocaust. This is called Touring Poland, and it's by Ryder Fox, the person that compiled all these poems. He says, yes, I have seen the great caches, rooms full of shoes and eyeglasses, inside the barbed fence of Auschwitz, and in Treblinka, plowed with rows, the tiny little shoes and clothes. Where is the field of teddy bears? They did not come this far with those. They only came here with their clothes. 1 million little girls and boys would not have come without their toys. They must have come with teddy bears, held tightly with little fingers, would not have come without their toys. They did not come this far with those. They only came here with their clothes. Where is the room where you keep those 10 million little child fingers and the 10 million tiny toes? In Poland now, nobody knows. You're wrong, I said. God knows. God knows.
Wow. I tell you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My God.
Mm-hmm.
Without mothers and daddies.
Yep.
But this country is founded on family. And so we got the ideals of man. Mm-hmm. He can have an ideal, but he can't mess with God's plan.
Yeah.
We have to be vigilant in everything we do. It's all based on the little ones, because we was little in our days. And nobody got rid of us. But the man of war and the woman of war, they leave those little children with somebody who can care for them while they fight for their country and their rights. And now, all of a sudden, they're forced to take a jab if they don't do it. Then you cut off everything their dreams is about.
You know, it staggers the... Go ahead, Monby.
We have to do one thing, and we got to keep it. We got to fight for America, folks. And we can't be lazy in doing it.
Well, no, it's just, it staggers me that the wall-to-wall coverage of the murders in Texas, and that is a tragedy. I'm not taking anything away from that. You know, and the call for restricting our rights, like that's somehow going to make a difference, are by the same people that are promoting abortions to, quote, make them safe. And of course, my question is for who? And the same people that are pushing these snake oil DNA modifying deadly jabs into kids. So you can't, I mean, the hypocrisy is staggering in its gargantuan size, that the same people that are saying, you know, oh no, there was a tragedy in Texas, and there was, are perfectly willing to abort children before they're born and perfectly willing to jab them shortly after they're born. That's the problem.
Yes. Yes. It is.
Yeah. Does anybody know who Mark... Go ahead. Who's speaking there? Just first name? Anybody else
Desiree.
Wants to join in? Desiree, please feel free. Oh, now it's getting crowded. You guys will wait till the last minute. Why didn't you call us earlier in the show? Now they call. Great, thanks.
Listen, hypocrisy runs deep, you know, and the, like you said, the same ones that are pushing all that stuff, because they have an agenda, and we know that their agenda is to take down America, but God has a plan. And I believe, like, just before President Trump left office, that he put some things in place, and the military is now in charge. People don't really believe this or understand this, but the one that's in the resident that's in the White House now is not the one that's really running things. It may appear that way, and they let it go to appear that there is, but at the same time, whatever he tries to put something into existence, look how it looks like it's going to pass, and then at the last minute it fails. That's because he has no real power, and the military is in control. It's all a plan, and it's all at an appointed time to where the number of people that wake up to see the truth, and then they're going to overturn this all this stuff. Look at everything that's coming out. It's about to a big storm is about to hit.
Yeah. You know, I've heard that. Amen. Jesse says the same thing, and B says this. I think the price is too high. I think the cost of waiting is too long. I know there's a lot of folks, Josie especially, and we get into big arguments over this, that she says that we need to wait, that Trump and the military are working together, and all these folks are going to be arrested. And at what cost? At what cost were the lockdowns and the suicides and the drug addictions and the spousal abuse and the child abuse and the kids that were denied 2 years of their lives? At what cost is our energy and people freezing to death because they can't buy heating oil? At what cost is all this? I don't give a damn about arresting people that are guilty. I want to save the innocent. Okay, so to me, the cost is not worth it. If the military is running things and they're doing it badly, it's too late. These people should have been arrested November 4th, the day after the election. This is too high a price for this nation to pay. We've got too many people getting used to living in tyranny. And the more you get used to it, the harder it is to defeat it. That's the problem. And that's why I disagree with that.
Well,
if that's what's going on, I disagree. I think it's wrong. Yeah. Who wants in?
if they had done that at that point, then it would have been civil unrest that would have spread throughout the United States.
We had civil unrest.
Not to the point where it was like the actual civil war that was going on. It would have been a lot worse than what it is.
Well, what if it was a lot better? What if people saw that our country worked, that the Constitution works, that the overthrown government was overthrown? I think there would have been joy in the streets. I think you would have a completely opposite reaction. I think one of the best things for this country, I think the longer this goes on, the worse it gets, because it makes the coup acceptable. Every time someone says President Biden, every time someone says Biden administration, you're acknowledging the coup. You're saying it's okay to steal the government. I do not tolerate that. You know, that is not acceptable to me. There are reasons I correct people on this show when they say those things. Because you can't, if you say it, you accept it, and I don't accept it.
Quick comments, then I got another one.
Go ahead, Mama
okay.
B.
Listen to knowledge, okay? A lot of things we ask God to do, to take them out and do what they want to do. We're on God's time, and everything is based around time. Because if he gave us everything that we asked for, then we don't have no need to even talk to him. We done got in our own ways that we did it ourselves. So he had to make sure things are delayed in time where you can see, where you can understand my plans are not your plans. That is what it is. It's all based on timing.
You see, I'm not. Maybe that's my mistake. I'm not asking God for this. I'm asking my fellow citizen for this.
Yeah.
You know, I try not to ask God unless I have to.
You want to take the bullhorn. You want to take them bullhorns and you want to ride it and you're going to cut them off. That's the way you operate with that because you're sick of it.
Yeah.
But it's all in timing. It's all.
I was never good at timing. My timing sucks. Yeah. Okay. Let me get you a quotation you've all heard before. Excuse me. Then I'll try a couple more callers. We only have 15 minutes left. This is incredible. You probably don't know, you know the quote, but you don't know who it's from. It's from Pastor Martin Niemöller. And he was a Lutheran pastor in Germany, 1892 to 1984. His quote is this: "First they came for the socialist, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionist, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me." We're speaking out now, folks, okay? We're not holding back. I'm here to tell you the whole point of this show is to speak out as boldly and bravely. And even if I would rather make the grandest mistakes in my speech, but retain the right to make my free speech.
Yes.
Let me get a caller. New person here. Again, not on my guest list, not on my regular list, but that's okay. 401 area code. Welcome to Action Radio. First name and where are you calling from if you want to let us know.
Hey, Greg. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can.
Greg, this is T-Bone, brother. It's an honor to stand with you and to stand with Mama B at the Freedom Rally the other night. You're not recognizing the number because that's my it's my cell phone from when I was up in Rhode Island stationed at Moore College.
Okay. And so Steve, you spoke so quickly. I missed your last name. I know this is Dave Trombley.
And,
Dave Trombley.
You and I
spoke at the
Freedom Rally on Friday.
Oh, I know who you are now.
And,
yeah.
Mama B, I just want to say it was an honor to take your arm and escort you out there and let you talk to our city. You are amazing. You are a prayer warrior. And it has been wonderful to listen to you this morning. I've just been patiently waiting my time because I wanted to share briefly, and I know you've got a few minutes, Greg. I just want to share briefly about my grandfather. My grandfather served in World War II. I was waiting for your World War II poems, brother.
Oh, we did. We did
but
them.
But Mama B, I just want you to know I love you, girl.
Okay.
Thank you, darling. I love you, too. Thank you.
We actually
did go through World War II.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Dave, go ahead. Hey, I just want to share this with you. And I had sent you a text earlier, and I heard your comment about don't send text, but I had to get this to you wouldn't call it a poem, but a friend of mine whose grandfather also served in World War II hit me up early this morning on Memorial Day, and he says, you know, a warrior dies twice. And I'm driving right now, so I can't exactly read it to you. But basically it said, a warrior dies twice. It's the first time when the heart stops beating in battle, and the second time is when we stop telling their stories and remembering them. And that's what Memorial Day is all about. And that's what we're doing. We're telling the stories of our family and our loved ones who have served before us. And sometimes it's friends who we may have lost in training, whether it be locally here or around the country or even serving overseas. So whether it's combat-related or training-related, we've all who have served lost friends. And for those who come from military families, we have family that have served. So today our family honors my grandfather, my children's great-grandfather, who was Army Air Corps, and was a P-38 fighter pilot in World War II. He
wow.
was the first fighter pilot in our family. And then I served as an F-18 pilot, came in a little over 27 years ago, and we just left visiting our son who flies the F-35 up in Beaufort, South Carolina. He's the third fighter pilot in the family. So we honor our grandfather, my son's great-grandfather, through service. And so we just want to just remember my grandfather today, and he was Major Carlton Charles Dutton, U.S. Army Air Corps, died March 24, 1945. And he died in China shortly before the war ended as part of a special project that was preparing to drop the bomb on Japan. And
wow.
So I never got to meet him, but I got to honor him through my life service and what I did, and now training the next generation of warriors that go before. So thanks for the show today. Thanks for what you guys do, not only honoring and remembering our loved ones and our family members, our brothers and sisters that we lost in battle or in training, but thank you for what you do outside of today, standing up for freedom, medical freedom, religious freedom. It's an honor to call you two friends and to stand with you in this fight. And I have a thought on that if you got time for another 2 minutes.
Really quickly, because then I have 10 minutes left. I got another call. I got a couple more poems I really want to get to. And you're welcome to call back. Listen, you can have an hour. We'll talk about things and extend it. So I would just be brief as you can today. And then I want to get a couple more things in just to make this a complete show.
Craig, I'd love to have that hour with you, and we'll do that. So let me end with this. There were some things that happened recently with the courts, and I don't have my full faith and confidence in the courts right now, especially with the New York decision and the Supreme Court supporting the New York Supreme Court about children and vaccines. But I do believe that we have a chance in November. I believe everybody needs to get out and vote. And I'm really encouraged by what we've had between Senators Cruz, Rubio, Johnson, and others with the Americans Act. So I'll leave you with this. If you would encourage your audience to search the legislation called the Americans Act, which supports and defends our military members' freedom, religious freedom, to put in religious accommodations, to get those accepted, to stay in the military and not get forced out by the tune of tens of thousands, I think we've got to fight. I'm not waiting on the courts. I think we need to get Congress and the Senate to make this happen. So with that, I'll leave you and say thank you for what you're doing. And one last plug, Mama B, I love you. You're awesome.
Well, thank you. And I would encourage you to look at our citizen legislation. And with every call to vote, call to promote the citizen legislation that you want those people to vote for when they're in office. We have two candidates who are doing that, Jerome Bell and Calvin Windisch, who are running for Congress. Part of their campaign is with our citizen legislation. Let me I get one more call. Let me do a poem here. And Dave, thank you so much. And like I said, I'm going to give you plenty of time. You'll probably be a regular here very soon. This is one of the most powerful, one of the shortest poems, but one of the most devastating. For those that know airplanes in World War II, and we were talking about the P-38 earlier with Dave, the B-17, and I think I don't think the B-24 did, but the B-17 has something called a ball turret. And the ball turret was that plexiglass part of it. Someone please mute your lines if you're not talking, and a little bit of background noise. The ball turret was the part that hanged down, that would hang down below the airplane. And if you just imagine the southern hemisphere on a globe, that was the part of the airplane that it covered, the underside of the airplanes. When they were down, if that ball turret got jammed and the gear was up, those people died because there was no way to reach them. And so the ball turret, I knew a ball turret gunner. He was a friend of mine, Ace Darrow, at my flight school in Oakland when I was teaching. And so I didn't get to do the military.
military wore glasses, and then we'll talk about that someday too. The death of the ball turret gunner, Randall Jarrell, 1914 to 1965. From my mother's sleep, I fell into the state, and I hunched in its belly till my wet fur froze. 6 miles from earth, loosed from its dream of life, I woke to black flak and the nightmare fighters. When I died, they washed me out of the turret with a hose.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Let me get my caller. And the last one I want to get to is the Hurt Locker. I'll get to that one in just a minute. Let's get to local call. New caller, don't have your number anywhere. Doesn't mean you haven't given it to me. It's been a busy day. Welcome to the show. Who have we got here? First name, where you're calling from? Going once, going twice.
Angelo.
There we go. And this is?
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to jump on here to thank you for the show.
You're welcome.
And I want to honor my father. He was a medic in the Korean War. And also my Uncle Lee, he was a Navy. Uncle Nathaniel, Uncle Edward Thompson. And they're dear to my heart. The veterans are dear to my heart. And what is happening to America is very sad. And that's, like we say, they're rolling over in their grave right now.
Yeah, we're going to fix that.
To America.
We're going to fix that. What's your first name again, sir? I missed it the first time.
Angelo.
Okay.
Tallahassee.
Okay, well, feel free to call back more often. Let me get you one more poem. We've got about 6 minutes left, it looks like. Then I'll get to our statements from everybody here. But let's end on this one because this one's pretty powerful too. Hurt Locker was written by Brian Turner. Nothing but hurt left here. Nothing but bullets and pain and the bled out slumping and all, the F-bomb and all the F-bomb and the goddams and Jesus Christ of the wounded. Nothing left here but the hurt. Believe it when you see it. Believe it when a 12-year-old rolls a grenade into the room or when a sniper punches a hole deep into someone's skull. Believe it when 4 men step from a taxi cab in Mosul to shower the street in brass and fire. Open the Hurt Locker and see what there is of knives and teeth. Open the Hurt Locker and learn how rough men come hunting for souls.
Yes,
Mama B, you've been with me since the beginning. It's been quite a morning, hasn't it?
It has been quite a moment. Yeah. But I can say one thing, it's all good.
Yeah.
Thank God for Angelo coming on the show. And
hey, Mama
B. And Michaels and all of those that know what we are fighting for. And we're going to continue with the fight. We're not going to give up.
No, we're just getting started. We are just getting started.
He put us together for that.
Yeah.
He put us together.
Okay. Thank
God.
Some of them? I'm sorry, my baby.
We had victories this morning.
Yeah.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Are you kidding? Thank you. Listen, we're a team. This is what we do on Mondays. Yeah. I want to go to Pastor Don, then Kyan, then Desiree, then Bobby, and then Angela. We'll get you a quick statement. We've got about just under 5 minutes. Pastor Don, do you have a final word for us?
I do. I definitely want to say I appreciate all the callers, the new people, and the people that have been here before. And everybody, this is a very special day to enjoy your family members, love the people while they're here, because when they're gone, all they will be is a memory. My name is Pastor Don Jr., CEO of the Winning Team. Shouts out to the 300 Elite members, and shouts out to you, Mr. Greg. You put together a well-produced show today. I'm going to listen to the playback, so I'm out the way. But I just love the energy. It's a good energy, positive.
Well, thank you. Don't forget to share with your 300 because, you know, we can always use more listeners.
Amen.
And as we grow. Don't forget, we're forming a citizen lobby here of this nation. That's really what this is all about. Kyan. Your
yes.
Words.
Thank you so much for having me on. Thank you, Mommy. You know, we love you. We appreciate you. You've always been in our corner. You've always, since I've bow to Ron. You have been an encourager. When we need, I tell you, we need a lot of encouragement because we are fighting against the evils of this time and the evils of this world. And it's, make no mistake, it is not easy. It is not. It's something that we can only do with the grace of God and with the strength of the Lord. And we feel the resistance. We feel the evil, even within our own party, that fights against us. And I can tell you, as a black woman running for a state house, and I will only be, once elected, I prophesy that into existence, the second black woman to serve after Jennifer Carroll, and that's really unacceptable. But I just want to thank you all for having me on. My husband, if he's still there, he's been a great support, such a blessing. And I think back to a meet and greet that I had just this week, and it was at the home of a doctor, and his dad served I believe in World War II, he flew, I don't know the name, some type of bombers, I don't know the name of them. He took us into his room, and I'll never forget this moment. Mm-hmm. Before everything started, he took Bobby and I in his room, in his little man cave, and he showed us a picture of his dad, and he was in one of the bombers flying. And I assume he must have had another plane next to him that was able to capture that picture. And he talked about when his dad served, and his dad is no longer here on this earth, but his eyes got teary-eyed. And I told him, I said, you know, we see the old movies with those bombers, with those planes, and they didn't have the special equipment that they have today, all of the technology that really can fly the planes on their own. But these guys really, it was life or death with them. If they went into a nosedive, I mean, if they didn't know how, they didn't have the skill to come out of it, we lost them. And he shared some of the stories from his dad, and I'll never forget that. And I'm remembering that today, and I sent him a text, his wife a text, and told her, we're thinking about her father-in-law to let her husband know on this day. And
I just have to hold you up. I just have to hold you up only because of time. I don't want to get to Desiree, Bobby, and Angela. We only have a minute and a half
left.
So you get about 30 seconds each. Desiree?
I just want to say thank you, Greg. Love you, Mama B, and happy Memorial Day, everyone. Be blessed.
Thank you, Desiree. Bobby?
Yes, I just want to thank you and Ma B for setting this call up, allowing us to communicate. And I want to reserve the rest of my time to my wife so she can finish up the last few seconds.
Oh, hold on. We still have Angelo. So let's get Angelo and then see if we have any time left. We may not. Angelo, why don't you go ahead? Because you're our newest call. You got a call earlier for these big shows. Angelo, go ahead. What are your closing comments?
Yes, thank you, Greg. I want to thank Marby, my godmother. She's been a mentor. You know, she's taken us into different places, and I thank God for her and my wife, Desiree. And praise God. We thank God for your show that's sounding the alarm. Hallelujah. Amen. Go ahead.
So now what you need to do is to turn this into action. Go ahead, Mama B.
I want to say something right quick. The gentleman that escorted me on the field, and I don't know if he's still on.
No, I think he left.
He made me feel that I was doing the right thing for America. I love him. I thank God for him. I thank God for him speaking out for the military. That's who I was talking about earlier in the show. It was him that let me realize that this is serious. Okay, God bless all of you. Mom B, love every one of you all.
And thank you, Mom B, for bringing so many new friends to our show. I really appreciate it. We're done. Folks, we have to go. We're actually at the clock's already stopped. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And I'm going to turn you all into citizen legislators. So you want to go to writeyourlaws.com. That's writeyourlaws. It's not enough to complain anymore. We need to take some action. And I think we've figured out a way that we can do that. Thank you all so much. And we'll get back to our regular show starting tomorrow. Thank you for everybody that participated. Love you all too.